Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the greatest thing on the internet, Radio FUBAR, with your hosts, Matt Reefer.
Sorry, I tried to spit roast your mom.
Pete Johnson.
Guys, come on. Can't we have one night without a hate crime?
And me, Mr. Producer.
It would be rude not to eat her pie, which I assume is not only hot, but also moist. Although, hopefully not flaky.
Okay, that was fucking good.
Do you like that?
That was fucking good.
Pete missed it.
You'll hear it again.
Yeah.
The spin roast. I'm sorry I tried to spin roast your mom. You know, that is probably the most... that is probably the best description of how my mind works sometimes. Because I'm like, I can just stick a fucking stick up your ass and stick you over a fire and just slowly cackle as I watch you twirl around.
No, that's not... In context, have you watched season 6 of Archer?
No.
Lana and Archer have a baby.
Nice.
And they go to her parents.
Oh!
Her parents are hippies from the 60s, you know, Berkeley and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, shit.
So they go inside to do something, and Lana goes to do something, and Archer says, hey, fuck it, they got a hot tub. He gets in the hot tub. Mom and Dad come out and say, hey, that's a pretty good idea. Strip down naked and get in so he's all comfortable and stuff like that. And they start talking and saying stuff like, we have something we'd like to invite you to, or include you in or something. And he thought it was going to be a three-way.
Yeah.
And that's what he meant by spin roasting mom.
That's even better. That's even better than what I thought. Oh man, that's fucking because now I have that image in my head and that's just fucking funny.
Who's the band?
I don't know.
A local.
Shit, nice.
First band we've ever had on the show, remember?
I remember. Dude, it's been
way back in the day.
It's been a fucking while.
It's Perma Smile.
Those guys are awesome.
Mm-hmm. We're eating pizza. Sorry, everybody.
Yeah.
Pete is upstairs because he doesn't know how to read a clock.
He's playing World of Battleships. He'll be down when he loses.
How long does it take to...
Anywhere from 5 minutes to 20 minutes.
Oh, okay.
And based upon what was going on from what I've seen, it's going to be...
5 minutes.
It's going to be about 5 minutes. Not because he's playing like shit, but because he's... the rest of his team is playing like dog shit.
Ah. Oh, so
I went to go see Batman versus Superman on Tuesday.
Okay.
That is a shitty, terrible, awful fucking movie.
Okay.
The saving grace is Ben Affleck.
I've actually heard that a lot of people haven't had a lot of problem with him. Their biggest problem is still with Cavill or whatever the hell his name
is. Oh, yeah. Superman is... Yeah. Zack Snyder cannot write a fucking movie to save his fucking life. Every single Zack Snyder movie, I keep thinking, I was like, maybe this is the one where he gets back to what he did in Watchmen. And then I started to realize that Watchmen was the exception. And all the other shitty movies... Are how he actually makes a movie.
Well, people even have problem with Watchmen. But at least with Watchmen...
There was a coherent fucking story.
The coherent fucking story was the comic book that he just took pretty much line for line.
Yeah!
And somebody spent years and years drawing those comics, showing them what it should look like. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a lot of... They basically did
just,
it...
The fucking storyboards were already done from the comic book.
Exactly. Yeah.
No, I totally agree. Watchmen is a paint-by-numbers movie. Mm-hmm. You just follow what they fucking did in the comic book, and boom, it should be good.
Right.
But when you allow him to write the fucking thing himself, you end up...
I don't think he was actually the scriptwriter for Batman v Superman.
Well, whoever it was should be fucking fired.
Now, was it the story that sucked, or was it...
It is a collection of incoherent
scenes. It's a collection of suck. Okay.
It was a collection of incoherent scenes put together that were called a movie.
Okay.
None of them match together. You just have, like, you have things that happen that you're like, why in the fuck is this in here? For example, like, do you plan on seeing it at any point in time?
I don't know.
Okay.
No, okay, hold on. If you're listening and you don't want
to
know.
It's about to be a spoiler. Thank you.
That's going to spoiler, so skip ahead.
One small spoiler.
All right.
All right. So there is a scene where Bruce is, like, doing some detective work, which they actually show this. This is, like, the first time we've seen Batman actually be a fucking detective on screen, which is actually kind of cool.
Do you go down in the cave and everything's labeled Bat computer and
no, not bat, labeled, no. But like it's but it's absolutely like it was in
I
the
I would actually have liked to have seen that. That would have been kind of cool. Just to see, you know, bat computer.
Right, yeah. But he's sitting there and we cut to a scene where Gotham's been decimated. It's fucking wasteland, sand, all sorts of crazy shit. Batman's wearing like this leather duster, and then he gets his ass beat down and whatnot. So he wakes up. When he wakes up out of this, like, quote-unquote dream, right, we have this weird thing that kind of, like, bursts through the scene, and there's someone inside of it with, like, this, like, rolling, like, silver cloud-looking thing that kind of looks like the Flash. Okay. And and this person warns Bruce that Lois is the key. To what? No one. I still don't fucking know what Lois was the key for. And then Batman wakes up.
You would figure she would be the gatekeeper, not the key.
Right. You would think. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. No, I totally agree with you on that. And then Bruce wakes up from his dream inside of a dream. So there's so many, like, this is a great way to sum up every issue I have with this movie. First off, you didn't fucking need the dream inside of a dream sequence, right? There are things that we know about the Flash that you can set up with this that he...
There are things that you know about the Flash.
True, but even, okay, so we're supposed to build a movie to the lowest common denominator, right? There's things that I know about the Flash, but there wasn't anything told in this fucking scene that would allow anybody who doesn't know what the Flash can do to what the fuck just happened at all. Just at all. Like, it's a collection of shit that doesn't tell you anything. And the only reason I'm able to piece it together is because I know what the Flash can do. And because I know what the Flash can do, it's an incoherent mess. The Flash can travel back in fucking time. You don't need to explain it by a dream inside of a dream sequence, because when Bruce wakes up from the first time, you can just literally have the Flash show up in that little deal right there, and that is him traveling back through the Speed Force, back to time, to a point where he fucked up before he knew Bruce Wayne, who was Batman, and told him this. You don't fucking need to have it like him then wake up from that. It makes no fucking sense. And it doesn't even make sense if you don't know what the Flash can do.
Right.
And that right there sums up everything wrong with this movie. Just everything wrong. It's an incoherent mess.
I heard the actual fight actually kind of sucked.
Yes, it does. Absolutely.
Go ahead and spoil it. You've already gone that far, you know.
Okay, so the fight between Batman versus Superman, right?
Which I heard Wonder Woman's basically worthless in this movie.
She doesn't do much, but then again, because she doesn't do much, she has no chance to ruin it, you know? So it's not bad.
Everybody was all excited about Wonder Woman finally being in a movie, and then they don't use her for shit.
At all. Just at all.
She was basically, it sounds like this movie was just written, it was kind of like the Iron Man 2 of movies.
It was written to further an agenda. Mm-hmm. By
everything
DC.
Else is going to sprout off of this.
Mm-hmm. Basically, yeah.
So,
basically what happens is Bruce trains himself up to with all this crazy training and stuff like that. He builds the suit. He also's got to go get the kryptonite. So, like, Lex Luthor goes and gets the kryptonite from someone who found it in the Indian Ocean. And then we have this whole entire chase. Like, this is before the fight. So we have this whole entire chase sequence, right? Where Batman is trying to steal this kryptonite from Lex Luthor, Lex Luthor's goons, right? And this is where the fucking thing goes sideways with Zack Snyder and him, his direction, or whoever wrote this, because they actually have Batman killing people.
Really?
Really. And using guns.
I think there might actually be precedent for that.
Not
but he never used them against...
Yeah. Human
like shot a person with it, like he would shoot a chandelier with it or something like that.
Right, you know. But yeah, no, there's totally scenes of him where like he snatches up a car and pancakes it up against another car, like upside down type of deal. And you're like, there's four people in that car and there's four people in the other car, and it just fucking crushes it. And you're like, there's no way that those eight people aren't dead. There's no fucking way.
Did you go see this with...
No, with he did not. Okay. But I don't think he cares. I went to go see Batman versus Superman.
Totally, I have no interest.
You give about as many fucks as I do.
I was...
I wanted to go see this shit show.
Oh, look at the microphone.
I wanted to go see this shit show just because.
You were right, man. About 5 minutes.
Yep.
I don't know why I was scared. Because once I got into the middle of the map, and then the enemy top tier battleship shot me, and I got caught on fire, and I'm like, are they shooting HE at me? Oh. And I said it in chat. I'm like, are you shooting HE? They're like, did it work? And I return salvo and I get three hits on their ship citadels. And I'm like, no, it didn't fucking work, did it?
Matt's talking about the shit show that is
Batman v Superman. Oh my God. This thing is fucking terrible.
He said, imagine.
I have the question before we get in here was, did you walk in the theater saying, I need to see this shit show, or did you walk in thinking, I wonder how much of a shit show this really is?
It was the second one. I wanted my own experience for this as I started to blast this movie apart.
Okay, so you didn't come in completely already.
Against it.
And I'm going to laugh all the way through it. I'm like, maybe people are just being too harsh.
Right, yeah. I was open-minded, but had a good understanding of what it
might be. Well, you can't really avoid it. Yeah, you can't avoid the critics everywhere on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and everything else. You can't.
Matt's pretty much explained it as...
You could avoid spoilers for Star Wars, but you didn't. You knew it was good before you went and saw it, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Imagine Iron Man 2... if it totally sucked. Iron Man 2 without any kind of storyline.
That's not a bad thing. I didn't mind Iron Man 2.
I know, but you know what I mean by that. Iron Man 2 was basically just there to kick off the MCU.
That was Hulk.
No, I mean kick it off as in, you know, to sequel off of and for everything to reference.
Yeah.
Oh, like the Captain America shield reference and everything like that. Right. Well, I guess kind of, yeah.
But yeah, no, this...
Batman kills people in this movie.
I know. I told you that. I've messaged you that on Facebook. I'm like, so Red Letter Media did the review and apparently Batman totally doesn't kill a guy. Or totally doesn't kill a car full of people.
Yeah, no, totally doesn't. Absolutely doesn't. And then I go see this, and it's like, no, it totally like lands upside down on top of another car. So it's eight people he actually murdered.
Well, I mean, I heard it described as this is like phase two of the car compactor when it hits. Like, it's not just the roof caves in a little bit, and maybe they got some neck injuries or... Oh, everybody?
You know, everybody's fucking
dead. You see the guy getting swiped by the car, the police officer getting swiped by the car on the pullover on those videos, and you're like, oh, he got out unscathed. Mm-hmm. And somebody's like, no, nobody got out unscathed in this. At least one person died.
The whole scene where he's trying to, because that whole scene is caused by him trying to steal kryptonite from Lex Luthor. And it's come...
Batman is stealing?
Yeah.
Okay.
From Lex Luthor.
Well, from the bad guy.
From the bad guy to try to kill another bad guy.
At the time that he was stealing from Lex Luthor, did he know Lex Luthor was
yes.
bad guy? Okay.
He assumed that Lex Luthor was bad.
No, not assume. Did he know?
Did he have evidence that Lex Luthor was up to shady shit?
Yes.
Or did he know he had kryptonite and decided I needed kryptonite?
He saw Superman as the bigger threat in that circumstance.
That's not what we asked.
No, but that's how... I don't fucking know, man. Like,
Did he just find out that Lex Luthor had kryptonite and decided he needed kryptonite to take out Superman?
Yes. That one.
Lex Luthor had done nothing shady to Superman or Batman up until
this point? No, because the whole the whole underlying of this point is that...
Batman versus Superman should be titled Batman and Superman Piss Off Lex Luthor.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know what Lex's thing is like. I got kryptonite. I got a trump card in my back pocket in case Superman ever goes rogue. The same thing Batman's thinking. Batman's like, I need to have that.
Yeah. Right. So there's this.
Was it real kryptonite or was it shit that they made with tar because
no,
they couldn't?
No, it's real kryptonite. It's a rock they found in the Indian Ocean. I know what you're saying. So this whole scene, he's trying to steal the kryptonite.
Question.
Yes.
Did they do a scene where like the kryptonite lands on Earth in the Indian Ocean?
No.
Like 100 years ago or 200 years ago or something like that?
No, it would have landed at the same time as Superman.
This was a byproduct of it growing from the events of Superman.
I don't know.
They just find
it.
No explanation given for kryptonite. Okay. At least in the other movies, they show like kryptonite fucking flying to Earth and shit.
Basically, what happens here is we go like that's the second scene in the movie, like the second opening sequence, because we have the credit scene, which is the death of Martha and Thomas Wayne, which is it's only there to set up the fact that when Thomas Wayne dies, he says Martha. That's it. Which is completely relevant from how the Batman versus Superman fight is going to end.
Yeah, I heard that already. I heard that from everybody. Bruce Wayne and Clark Kent, their mothers have the same name.
Well, I know that.
Really? That's the catalyst that gets them to stop fighting.
Oh, for Christ's
sake. Right!
I can't remember who said, I think it's... Superman says
right
Martha.
Right before he's about to like murder him with the spear thing is when he's like, I gotta do it. You gotta do this to save Martha. He's like, why did you say that name? And Batman freaks. Yeah. And it's the only reason why the opening sequence is like that is because as you see Thomas Wayne fall down.
The parallel between Thomas Wayne dying saying Martha and Superman about to die saying Martha.
Right, yeah. That's it. That is the only reason.
Makes Batman realize he might be the bad guy right here.
Yeah, that's it.
That's not bad. It could have been done better.
Kevin Smith said this, because I watched Kevin Smith's review after I went, and he's like, there's way better ways to set this up, where you have Bruce go to a graveyard where their vaults are, and you have Thomas and Martha Wayne on their names on the headstones, and that establishes the fact that that's their fucking name, and you allow the audience to interpret what that means. That's perfect. That's perfect way to fucking do it.
Or maybe this could be a Batman that, no offense to Thomas Wayne, may have cared slightly more about his mom than his dad.
Right.
Because Batman's always been daddy issues.
Yeah.
Maybe they could have done mommy issues.
What little kid
set up Wonder Woman a little bit better, too.
Yeah, what little kid doesn't care about their mom more than her dad?
Right.
Yeah.
I think little boys idolize both. Your mom's your caretaker, right, and your dad's the hero.
Right, but if something happens to your... You know, if somebody fucks with your dad, you can, you know, especially with a little boy, you have that, well, my dad can beat up your dad syndrome. But if somebody fucks with your mom, you take that personal.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't have gone the same way as Kevin. I would have gone, like, scenes of, like, Martha putting Bruce Wayne to bed or something.
Yeah, just to kind
something
of establish
sweet
that.
Like a kitchen scene where she gives him an extra cookie or something. But then they got Alfred to do the cooking and shit. So I guess that may not necessarily that. But you know what I mean.
Yeah, set it up that there's an emotional connection.
Emotional connection between Bruce and his mom. So yeah. That's he got triggered.
Yeah.
Triggered. Batman got triggered. So the scene he's stealing kryptonite that we totally... Yeah.
It's completely and utterly like Superman shows up and like the Batmobile smacks into him, and then like the people that got the kryptonite get away, and Superman's like, you better not I better not see you again. And he just flies off.
I
right?
burn a hole in you with my laser eyes,
basically,
asshole.
Yeah. Basically, it's like a threat. It's a fucking threat. If I catch you doing this shit again, I'm going to rip your fucking head off type of deal. So then there's some other scenes, and then we go back.
That's the Superman we know and love, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, that's
I'll kill you if you threaten me.
That's the fucking... That's the Boy Scout Superman that we know and love. So... Then we, for some reason, we get some other things that happen. Then we go back and we have an entirely off-screen Batman stealing the kryptonite from Lex Luthor. Like, why in the fuck? The Red Letter Media guys brought this up. It's like, why is this off-screen? This has been a hilarious. This has been an awesome.
Wait, what
scene.
Was off-screen?
Him the actual stealing of the kryptonite.
Yeah. Oh, so you mean basically they had one scene where he talks about stealing it and another scene where he has it.
He's going to steal it.
He's trying to steal it.
And then
Superman
he has
stops
stolen
him.
It.
And then we go to the next scene where he has already stolen it.
Decides to steal it. Goes to steal it.
So they took...
Has it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
They took the Batman Ocean's 11 shit out of it.
Yeah, basic. Just... Yeah. The cool shit that's Batman.
Or the Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
Him coming down in the...
Yeah. The cool shit we actually read Batman comic books to watch.
No, we read Batman so we can see him have a gun.
All right. I pulled up the Huffington Post, which, you know, the world's...
I don't know why everybody says that.
Crappiest news source.
Because every once in a while they put out an article you agree with, and you're like, shit.
Every once in a while they do. And this is one thing that comes out. It says 22 things that are super wrong with Batman versus Superman. Mm-hmm. Tell me, do you bleed? Well, your ears will during the movie's dialogue.
They Spider-Man 2, Amazing Spider-Man 2'd it, didn't they?
Yep.
Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice had everything it needed to make a great movie. Superheroes. And a lot of them. But something happened along the way. Perhaps Lex Luthor was secretly behind it.
You can tell the core of this movie is a great idea. The execution and the writing and the direction. Shit.
Perhaps Lex Luthor was behind it. Nah, maybe not. His plans are ridiculous and don't really make sense.
At all. Just at all. Anyway, there's no motivation on why he's doing this.
Anyway, despite the early hype, reviews of the movie came out. And they haven't been stellar. So what went wrong? Well, here are 22 things for starters. Warning, major Batman v Superman spoilers.
Yeah.
Number one, the name Martha.
All I can think of when somebody says just Martha is fucking Dennis the Menace.
Yeah.
Everyone.
Martha!
Martha.
Everyone
that
has
boy is a menace.
Everyone has a
the
weakness.
Walt math over.
Yeah. Superman has kryptonite. Batman has his mom's name. More on that later because this movie is obsessed with the name Martha.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, everywhere anything happens is likely uninhabited. There are no people anywhere.
They go out of their way to set up the fact that this is happening in things that are not populated with people. Because Zack Snyder got panned
from the first movie.
Yeah.
Oh, so Superman and those other people just murdered like 200,000 people.
Yeah. He's like, well, they have Anderson. There's a scene where they have Anderson Cooper saying, oh, it's thank goodness it's after hours in downtown Metropolis.
Oh, it's after hours.
Yeah.
Don't worry. There's no repeat of the destruction from Man of Steel here. No make-believe people were harmed in the making of this movie.
Because we set it up in a singular line.
Over the top.
Yeah.
If anything blows up, we are repeatedly reassured everything's okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Repeatedly.
Like five times.
Instead of toning down the amount of destruction, no, we'll just excuse it. Okay.
Yeah.
Number three, everyone seems to think Superman shot a bunch of people.
Superman?
Yeah. Yeah, shot? Superman must have killed all these people. That darn Man of Steel with all his guns, right? Typical Superman.
Trying to think of the scene.
I'm guessing they're probably just talking about, you know, he caused the deaths of, and people assume that he shot him, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh, no. Oh, no, that's actually an underlying plot line of this. So basically what happened was Lois was going to find like this African terrorist, right? Over like this,
that's racist.
That's what it was. That's what it fucking was.
He was a terrorist in Africa.
Yeah. Who happened to be
natively born on the continent of Africa. And he was black. An African terrorist.
He was an African terrorist. All
right. Well, now you made it racist because you had to identify him as black.
Well, whatever. That's what he was though. Like that was, that's the trope that they were going with was the, that warlord.
Oh, so
style.
It's a trope. Now it's really racist.
Oh, who gives a fuck? But. So he goes over there. So she goes over there, and Jimmy Olsen's with her. This guy, they put Jimmy Olsen in here now.
Is it the black Jimmy Olsen from Supergirl?
No. It's the nerdy white kid, Jimmy Olsen.
Remember, and the DC Cinematic Universe, completely separate from those pesky popular TV series.
I know, but I watched Man of Steel once, and I watched the one before that. Once they had that little
Superman Returns.
Yeah, they had that little impact on me, I guess.
I got you. All right.
I watched them on regular TV and they didn't hold my attention.
That
so
finger
I
motion you were
lot.
Doing made me like balls?
Like paint.
No,
balls,
I was trying to hear.
What are you
that was my
fondling.
No, that was I need a stress ball to think for a second.
Clitoris stimulation.
Oh, he didn't hear the new intro.
It's pretty
number
funny.
Four. Batman's dream.
I was outlining the point.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Lois goes there. Jimmy Olsen's there, and then apparently, like Jimmy Olsen was hired by like the CIA to spy on this guy that Lois had nothing to do with. So the terrorist guy is going to try to kill her, and then Superman finds out, shows up, and all of the security guards for the terrorists, which were hired by Lex, start murdering all the terrorists and then leave, trying to blame Superman for this. Oh, so, okay. Quote unquote, Superman murdered all these people with weapons rather than his laser eye beams.
All right.
Convoluted as fuck, isn't it?
Number four on the list of 22 things that are super wrong with Superman. Batman dreams about a giant bat.
Wait, what?
Yes.
So Lex knew the assignment. He got security embedded with the terrorists because he knew Lois Lane was going to be on assignment, and he figured Superman would show up because Lois Lane was in danger.
Right.
Knowing they had a romantic relationship of some kind.
Right.
What?
Yes. Those are the assumptions you have to make to get to that. Yes.
And they said Joker's plots were too complicated for a nutcase to pull off. What the? That's a lot of dominoes to fall exactly into place on the other side of the world.
Yeah.
After a quick reminder that the name Martha is important, because, you know, thanks, y'all, because we forgot already. A giant bat-like monster comes to Superman, or comes at Batman. Sure, why not? This is probably the least confusing dream in the movie.
I'm going to give
Which are four of them. There are four separate dream sequences.
I'm going to give Zack Snyder 1% of an apology. I am 99% sure that the masses that even know that Batman's parents are dead don't remember his mom's name. And the other half barely remember the dad's name. They just know the Waynes.
The Waynes, yeah. Number five, you know, Batman and Marlon. Batman's dream about other flying monsters. Unfortunately, the giant bat dream made too much sense, so it was time to add in some flying monsters, teasing potential villain Darkseid.
Mm-hmm.
But don't worry.
And no, Batman has that dream.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no need for any explanation.
The completely terrestrial superhero has a vision of an otherworldly, near deity level bad guy. Okay.
It's just too bad they couldn't throw in the name Martha here a few more times, you know, hashtag missed opportunity.
And also they dream in the sequence he's talking about, that's the one I was talking about. It's a dream inside of a dream. So he wakes up out of that like post-apocalyptic world, right, dream, to seeing the Flash coming back in time, warning him that, it's the next one.
It's further down here. Number six, seriously, how much does Batman sleep? In this whole dream sequence, or is this whole movie a dream sequence? Are these all visions? Have we all seen Incepted, or have we all been incepted?
Yeah.
This is all your fault, Leo. Number seven. Wait, was that the Flash? Gosh, I hope not.
It was.
The Flash seems to tap into the power of Speed Force and show up in a dream, of course. You know, they tell Batman something about Lois Lane, but you can barely make out what he's trying to say. None of it seems relevant.
And then he fucking wakes up out of the dream.
Dude is either saying, Lois is the key, or I gotta pee.
Something like that. I can't tell.
Number 8, quick reminder. Martha, Martha, Martha. Number 9, quick reminder. There are no people anywhere. No one is getting hurt, and people are still named Martha. Noted. Number 10, I'm not a lady, I'm a journalist. Yeah, you tell him, Amy Adams.
That's what the Amy is. Well, we got to keep Amy Adams on contract, so Lois is the key.
This is a ladies' room. I can't use this. Where are your restrooms for journalists? Batman gets a bunch of angry letters. One says something like this.
That gif of Wonder Woman is hilarious.
From at Christopher J. Rosen.
I can see it out of the corner of my eye. I've seen it before. It's Wonder Woman at one of the Super Friends computers just doing this.
No, that's the next one anyway. I haunt you. Whoa. Are there ghosts in this movie?
You too? Let your family die.
Number 12. Sure, the world is about to end, but that can wait. Wonder Woman needs to check her email.
Also, there was gratuitous usage of Easter eggs in this fucking movie. They put the costume of Jason Todd in the bat scene, in the bat cave.
We're only halfway through the list.
Oh my God.
Right when things are building up, the movie takes a quick intermission from the plot as Wonder Woman receives an email from Batman.
Yep.
It has stolen files from Lex Luthor and introduces videos of future Justice League members.
The Flash, Aquaman, Cyborg, and...
But the whole scene doesn't have a damn thing to do with what's going on.
It's completely disconnected from the fucking plot. It is purely pure fan service.
If Batman sent her a bunch of cat videos instead, it would have seemed more relevant.
It'd have made a hell of a lot more sense.
At least we'd be like, look, they're both like cats. Meow, this movie's getting good.
Or he sends her a text like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Plus, has Wonder Woman ever used a computer before? Because it kind of seems like she has no idea what she's doing.
Wonder Woman! She's probably using Bing or something.
And then someone called In Gambit We Trust on Reddit, so Reddit says, also the way she scrolled down sentence by sentence. Mm-hmm. I remember my first email. After an intense fight scene, Batman and Superman realize their moms are both named Martha. Suddenly, they're BFFs.
Yep.
Did we just become best
That's
friends?
That's exactly yep. what it...
You want to go kick Lex Luthor's ass?
Yep. That's exactly how it is.
Oh, so that's why the movie keeps repeating Martha. Okay, I got it. And that's when a little part of me died.
Was it Martha the key then, not Lois? So then
why? That's from the future.
Oh, okay. Then why was it there? It doesn't make any fucking sense.
It's going to be explained in future movies. Now you have to go see them to have this dream from the Flash.
Batman saves Superman's mom and is all like, I'm a friend of your son.
That's exactly how it happens.
No, 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 no. You're not friends. Your moms are both just named Martha. That's it. Your moms are just Martha.
Wait, who saves what?
Batman saves Superman's mom from Lex.
Who plays Superman's mom?
The same person that did in Man of Steel.
Okay. Yep, there's Doomsday's butt.
Yep, Oh, I didn't tell you about this. Not only do we have the Dark Knight Returns storyline, but we shove the death of Superman in here, too.
Okay, let's zoom in and just hold it right there.
Yes,
on that.
He fucking died.
Yeah. Let's just hold
That's
it right
the end
there
of the movie.
On that.
That's pretty close to the end of the movie.
Yep, let's just zoom in, guys. Hold it right there on that butt, guys. Perfect, said someone on the set, probably.
It's CGI, though.
But,
get right in there on that computer-generated ass crack.
But there's only a butt. At least it explains why he's so mad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because Doomsday was just pissed that he had a butt and no dick.
Yeah.
Number 17, Superman gets...
Under those conditions, everyone's bound to crack.
Superman gets nuked in space. It's cool, though. He's fine in like 5 minutes.
Yep. The sun. Yellow sun radiation regenerates Superman from a nuclear warhead explosion.
In fact, let's just forget that happened. Like a lot of things in this movie, it's not really important. Moving on.
Not at all. Not at all. Not fucking at all.
Number 18. Sure, we're in the middle of a huge battle, but it totally makes sense that Superman stops and hears Lois Lane drowning under some rubble.
Mm-hmm.
Why is she here again? As long as we're at it, we might as well talk about love for a bit, right? We might as well. Number 19, Harry Potter's parents don't appear when Doomsday and Superman's powers lock.
Right. I-beam for I-beam.
Another missed opportunity.
Yeah, they're firing I-beams
at
each
other. Oh, good. They put the GIF in.
Yeah, they did.
They put the stepbrothers GIF in it.
Number 20, Vin Diesel doesn't appear during the random car chase or any of the other scenes that remind you of the Fast and Furious franchise.
Absolutely.
Number 21, Batman visits Lex Luthor in prison and says stuff about finding him wherever he goes.
Yep.
Dude, you're in prison. He's in prison. Mission accomplished.
Lex Luthor gets out of prison.
Also, Lex keeps saying ding, ding, ding. Please stop that. And number 2, whoa, our moms are both named Martha.
Oh, he keeps saying ding, ding, ding. I get it.
Yeah.
Like somebody guesses something or says something, and he's like, ding, ding, ding.
Don't get me wrong. I can see where Jesse Eisenberg was going with Lex. It was just, it was poorly written.
I have a feeling that Lex is going to be the Lex and Batman are going to be the least of my problems when I finally see this movie. Because I actually like the idea. Gene Hackman versus Superman. It was Gene Hackman versus Superman. It wasn't Lex Luthor versus Superman. Kevin Spacey did a pretty good job, but he wasn't smart enough. He was just arrogant.
Right.
He was vengeful. He wasn't smart.
I got the sense from watching Jesse Eisenberg play Lex that he feels that he is the chess master and playing in a field with a bunch of ants.
Right.
Like that's how you got it. And the dialogue is shit.
They should have just cast Clancy fucking Brown.
Yeah.
As soon as the fanboys in the audience heard Clancy Brown's voice in the trailer, they already bought their tickets.
Yeah.
No, they should have cast what's-his-name. You already know him for being bald and shit. Breaking Bad.
Dude, I would have completely bought into Bryan Cranston being fucking Lex Luthor.
If he could have done
the voice.
He's
already got the character.
If he could have done the voice deep enough, that would have been it. But I know Jesse Eisenberg didn't do it, but that was a different interpretation.
Well, they've got audio guys for that can change the pitch of the. That's what.
I'd much rather have Bryan Cranston's voice because.
No, I mean if you needed to make it deeper.
Nope. You would have been able to tell. It wouldn't have been the same. Clancy Brown is Clancy Brown. You can't get that gravel anywhere. He's like your voice.
Yeah.
No. Oh, okay.
The Kurgan.
Now the.
We couldn't get Clancy Brown because he's busy being the general on The Flash.
He's really busy with that.
That's true.
Yeah. We can't interconnect it at all.
Also no. Arrow.
Oh, yeah, because I forgot season 2 isn't... It's weird the way they're doing The Flash season 2, so...
It's because it comes out in the spring. They have to keep taking breaks.
Right, but no, what I mean is it's...
Earth 2?
Kind of, it's like a separate from season 1. It's not like a continuation.
No, it is.
But it is.
I don't know what you're trying to get at.
Because the dude's back again, right?
He's, okay. Harrison Wells is from Earth 2. The new Harrison Wells, played by the same actor, is the version from an alternate universe.
Right.
If you're talking about the return of...
Okay, so it's not so he's from a separate
Flash.
Universe, but it's not like the Flash, like the series went to an alternate universe.
Right.
Just that one character.
Just that one character jumped over. Yeah.
They do eventually go into Earth 2 to try to stop Zoom there, but then they come back and they're dealing with Earth 2.
Right, but so it actually is like like the next year or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, okay. Because I haven't watched any of season 2 yet, so I don't know.
Reverse Flash does make an appearance, but it's. Reverse Flash before Reverse Flash's season. That's how he figures out where Flash, the timeline Flash is from. And
yeah.
Okay.
That's how he knows to go back to that point in the original season and et cetera. It's time travel shit. You can't wrap your head too far around it or you'll get mad at it.
The thing is that the Flash has always dealt with time travel like that. Like, the comic book did that because the Flash can do it.
And you really have to keep up on reading it to know where everything is.
Yeah.
So, the movie sucked.
It is terrible. It was so bad.
Was it? I mean, is it? Does it suck just because of what your expectations, or did it just suck?
I had zero expectations, and I was completely disappointed by it. It's not even a well put. Like, if you remove the fanboy stuff, even then, it's still a poorly put together movie.
Okay, now is it going to curtail or possibly curtail you wanting to go see the next installment,
which is the Suicide Squad? Oh yeah, absolutely. Because Zack Snyder's involved with this. He's involved with the Suicide Squad, and that movie's going to be fucking awful.
I think you're going to cave, and you're still going to go see it in the theaters, and I'm going to make fun of you for that. Because you should.
I'm not saying that he's not going to go, but it's going to make him a little bit more. I don't know what's the word.
I am contemplating on figuring out a way to get this movie in a completely legal means.
Now, how many people were... You went to go see it on Tuesday, so it had been out for...
2 weeks.
A week and a half at that point?
Something like that, yeah.
How many people were in the theater?
Like six.
I heard that basically, like, Friday night is when it made all its money.
Yep.
Like, by Saturday afternoon, everybody was like, I'm out.
This movie's...
You see, at least for, like, Guardians of the Galaxy and shit like that, and Iron Man movies, they had fans of the movies involved in the process at the creative level. They don't have that in the DC movies. They don't. Zack Snyder said he had barely read any of Superman's comic books or didn't know about Justice Friends or any of that bullshit. Yeah. Super Friends, Justice League, any of that. He knew about the Batman from Nolan movies, and that's where he got his information. It's like, oh.
And I think that's part of the reason why Star Trek, the reboot, and Episode 7 did so well that they actually got a fanboy.
Well, J.J. Abrams is not big of a fan of
both. Not a fanboy, but you know what I mean.
But his two writers, his co-directors, his first assistant director and everything are huge Star Trek nerds.
Right, but even he knew more about it than the average...
The average person, yeah.
Right. I mean, he wasn't like going to Comic-Con every year dressed up as Boba Fett, but...
But he's seen Star Wars a time or two.
Right.
Well, like, even J.J. Abrams' stylistic choice for the movie was, and people don't, like, the lens flares and shit like that are bad, but, like, the style of the uniforms and everything, he literally said, it just reminded me the time period this came out is the same time that Jet Set was finally falling off in American culture, mm-hmm. and that's what I wanted to zero in on, is when this was originally made, like, that sleek, clean,
right.
everything's a flat, clean panel. That's what I wanted to accentuate. And I'm like, I get that stylistic choice, and it makes sense for Star Wars, because this is when they're first getting going. They're jet-setting into the galaxy.
Yep.
I get it. I like it, actually. It's an interpretation that deviates from the normal and pays just enough homage to people.
Right.
The Guardians of the Galaxy writer, the lady, she read the comic books. When she got assigned to adapt it to a screenplay, she went and read 100-and-something issues of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yep.
Before she put pen to paper, hand to keyboard, whatever. Zack Snyder, oh, I need to make a movie? All right, where's the script? All right, I'll get going here.
It's the same thing that the lady who wrote Guardians of the Galaxy did the exact same thing John Bernthal did with The Punisher, where he went to a comic book store in L.A. with, like, a stack of fucking comic books.
I will say, because you brought up The Punisher, I'm about halfway through season two of Daredevil. And I really like this version of the character.
I knew you would. As soon as I saw it, I'm like, oh, he's an ex-Marine that's decided to just kill a lot of people. This is Frank's.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, the Punisher is fucking awesome.
Now, I have never read a single Punisher comic book. My knowledge of the Punisher are the two shitty movies that they did back in the 80s and 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So compared to those, I really love this version of the Punisher.
The only reason I, and this is a small issue, I like it. the only small issue I have with it, and this is, again, an interpretation thing, is this Frank Castle seems to be a little too aware that his actions are immoral. Because the Punisher I'm aware of from the comic books didn't think he was on the wrong side of the law.
At all. At
this point, Frank Castle knows he's on the wrong side of the law and doesn't care.
Right.
That's one thing I'm like, that's kind of a key concept of the character to abandon. I want to see how well you develop this.
I kind of think the way they're going on this is they basically took Deadpool's perfect willingness to care or perfect willingness to kill for absolutely no reason and bloody, nasty, whatever mm-hmm. it takes, and jammed it together with Batman's morality code, and they're trying to have the two of them. Not saying he's a split personality.
No, I know what you're saying.
And jam the two characters together, and you get Frank Castle. I can kind of understand, this version of it, at least the way they're setting it up, with him witnessing his wife and kids getting murdered and nobody doing anything about it. And he said, fuck it, I'm going to just going to take everybody out that took out my family. Fuck them. You know?
That's a motivation you can kind of understand.
Right.
They did capture, though, the Daredevil. Because I was trying to explain this to Matt. Most of the time when Frank Castle went crazy, he went crazy in New York. And 90% of the time, it was either Spider-Man or Daredevil that had to deal with his ass. So I think they did a really good job of capturing the fact that it's not a love-hate relationship. No, Daredevil straight up hates Frank Castle, but he can never really hate him. Right. He can never fully despise him.
And that's why he disagrees
with his methods and how
entirely.
He...
Entirely.
That's why I appreciated the one episode where the entire episode, Daredevil is chained to the roof.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. That was fucking cool.
It was the two of them just trying to justify themselves to each other.
And Daredevil realizes he's just one psychotic snap away from becoming Frank Castle.
Right, yeah.
Besides being able to use a gun. But
yeah.
I think Daredevil could probably use a gun.
To its maximum effectiveness, maybe not. Let's give him a shotgun. No, I'm sure he'll be fine with a shotgun.
But in a hallway when it's dark.
Oh, yeah.
He'll have a distinct advantage.
I think his sonar can well enough say, okay, I'm pointing in this general direction. They're in that general direction.
Right. Now give him a shot over 200 yards.
Right. No. Right. No. That's completely different.
He'll never be a sharpshooter, but he could probably, if he needed to, he could probably pick up a gun and put it in someone's face and pull the trigger. And that's what I meant,
close range. Because the vast majority of his fights, and he sets them up this way in the thing, because he'll walk in there and turn off the lights or break the lights or whatever. Because,
he doesn't need it.
He doesn't need it.
Yeah.
And they do,
Yeah.
Oh, Clancy Brown was in Daredevil 2. I forgot about that.
Was he?
I don't know if you guys have gotten that far yet.
Like I said.
Oh, I finished up the season.
He plays his colonel.
Okay. Okay. No, I haven't made it to that. I've made it.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
It's only one episode. It's only one episode.
I've only made it to the point where they just became his lawyers.
I think he's actually going to like that particular scene.
Yeah.
He's going to love that scene.
Yeah.
They call him in as a character. I'm not going to give you a spoiler other than he's the only character witness they can get for Frank Castle in the trial.
I'm wondering if they're going to, are they kind of doing him like Colonel Trotman to Rambo type?
A little bit.
Yeah. He's like the only guy that can have any kind of.
I'm going to give you, this is a guy that's been on the ground with him though. That's the difference.
Well, Trotman was too.
No, Trotman was their commander. He
was still there in the field with them.
In the field.
No, that's how Green Berets in Vietnam. The colonel was out there with them. They didn't sit back in the.
I don't think they ever really captured that in the series though. They always made it sound like Trotman was sending him out.
Right. No, he
knew what they were capable of and gave them assignments.
Knowing how they worked.
I know.
In those days, Trotman would have been there.
This was back right in, this them. Is recently in Iraq. Right.
In Iraq now, the colonel probably wasn't in the field with the guys.
Yeah, that's the... Yeah.
I can't give more away without spoiling the exact story that he tells and how he tells it and the coup that he pulls on the district attorney and shit.
It's pretty fucking brilliant.
He throws something right back in their face as soon as the DA does cross-exam, and the cross-exam is like, well, fuck it, I'm out. I can't. That was my one area to go in on, and he just shut that down completely.
All right, Pete. Man, I'm going to play the intro for him.
Yeah.
I changed the intro. New Archer season 6 quotes.
Oh, boy. Isn't this Archer Vice?
No, this is the season after
Archer
Vice.
Oh, they had another one? I thought that was it.
No, they got season 6, and they're in the middle of actually...
Venture Brothers is back, too.
I saw that.
What the fuck?
They're actually in the middle
three-year hiatus?
They're actually in the middle of showing season 7 on FX right now. But season 6 just showed up on Netflix.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the greatest thing on the internet, Radio FUBAR, with your hosts, Matt Reefer.
Sorry, I tried to spit roast your mom.
Pete Johnson.
Guys, come on. Can't we have one night without a hate crime?
And me, Mr. Producer.
It would be rude not to eat her pie, which I assume is not only hot, but also moist. Although, hopefully not flaky.
I love it. It's good.
Have one night.
You haven't seen any of season 6?
No.
Like I told Matt at the beginning, he goes, I like the idea of spit roasting your... I'm like, in context, it actually had to do with Archer trying to have a three-way with Lana's parents. That's what they meant by spit roast.
It's even funnier in context. I thought it was funny the other way, and then he gives me the context, and I was like, that's even better than what I had imagined. It's way better. Oh, man.
So the Cubs started out 3-0.
Yes.
They lost yesterday.
That's fine. The really unfortunate part is Schwarber blew his fucking knee out.
Yeah, yeah. Imagine 3 games into a season, he blew his ACL and his LCL.
Well,
he's out for the year.
Mm-hmm.
Damn it.
Yeah.
And the Cardinals started out 0-3. That was kind of nice.
Hilariously, at work, there was one of my friends.
Wait, Cubs won? I don't know what just happened.
The Cubs won their first 3
games in a row.
Games of the season.
Yeah. And the Cardinals went 0-3 in their first 3 games. And one of my friends, one of the people I work with at work, almost fucked it up at work. She's a huge Cardinals fan. And it was on Thursday, which was the Cardinals' day off. And I was like, did the Cardinals play today? And she was like, no. I was like, okay, good. So they can't go 0-4 today.
Hey, they got like 16 games to make that up. That'll
right.
They got 159.
And then it's World Series time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 159. Oh.
Yeah.
It's
okay,
almost like the sport started. Never ends.
Well, you see, that's the thing that I like about baseball over football. I like football because... You know, it's violent and they used to be able to hit the crap out of each other.
Knock the poop out of each other.
Right. But at least baseball, there's a game every day. I can turn the radio on and listen to a game. You know, football, you got to wait until Sunday.
Dude, when I'm out driving for Uber, it's going to be awesome during baseball season because I can literally just listen to every single fucking game on SiriusXM and just...
I almost paid the $20 to be able to listen to all the games. On my phone.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm too cheap. No, they scored 29 runs in their first 3 games.
Yeah. It's impressive.
It was... I mean, they won the first game, 6-1 or something like
that? Yeah.
Then the second game was 9-3. I don't remember. Yeah, it was something. And then the last one was like 14-9 or something like that.
14-6.
So keeping in mind, this really good start to the season. At what point of the season do the Cubs choke?
Well, usually it's around the All-Star break, which would be like right around the 4th of July.
Oh, so we're going to do like they always done. They're going to have a great season, and then they're going to get into some sort of playoff jam and just
usually they shit the bed. Usually they shit the bed long before that.
Yeah.
But also usually they start out the first month around 500.
Yeah.
And then they have a couple of good months, and then they suck balls. That's the standard.
I mean, playoff run isn't running to a playoff slot. Like,
right, yeah. Right. No, the, yeah.
Oh, we win six games, we'll get into the playoffs. Nope.
Oh, no. The Cubs are actually the anticipated World Series champion this year.
Really?
Based on betting.
Yeah.
Something like 14% of all of the money bet
has gone on the Cubs to win.
Sports books have gone on the Cubs to win the World Series.
All right, so I need to get involved with the mafia this year because they're going to be rich. They just made 14% more money this year.
Well, yeah, but they're only paying 2-1 on that as opposed to...
They're only paying 2-1 on the...
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's how...
So
that's
they
how,
are favorably... Oh, it's...
Well, that's how betting works.
That's more all of them are 2-1?
Well, they weren't that at the beginning. I think it's even lower than that now. It may even be like 5-3 or something like that.
Something like that. Like, let's look it up. Let's look up. We have this wonderful thing called the internet. We can look up the Vegas betting odds.
Thanks, Al Gore. He gave us the internet.
He gave us the internet. Yeah,
4-1 for the Cubs.
Yeah, and they're the smallest. They're uh-huh. the
next up is the Dodgers at 10-1, Houston at 10-1, and Boston at 12-1.
Yeah.
So Cubs are actually favored by Vegas, too.
Yeah.
That's creepy.
Right. Well, that's what I said. Right. But that's all based on betting. The more people bet for a particular outcome, the lower the odds get. Because Vegas, you know, hedges their bets. They say, okay, if everybody's betting for the Cubs, we're going to lower the odds. It may go down to 3-1 here at some point.
Yeah.
It probably started at 6-1 or 8-1 or whatever when they initially released the odds. And then once people start betting, then they adjust the odds. Now, you get the odds for when you bought in. You don't get the odds that
of course
that it ends up at. You know, so if you bought in at 6-1 and you win, you'll get paid 6-1.
Yeah.
So they're going to big brown it. Okay.
What do you mean?
I think it was back in like 2008, 2009, Big Brown was heavily favored for the Triple Crown. Heavily favored for the Triple Crown. I think the final odds payout when I went to bet at the track, and I didn't bet, the final odds payout was like 11-8. It was stupid.
Right.
And I'm like, I'm not even going to put money on that. And then I look at the odds, oh, you didn't even fucking win. I would have lost.
Right. But just like at the track, you get the odds on your ticket for the moment that you bet.
Right.
You know, right. Because at the track, you know, the odds change really fast.
The Kentucky Derby is run 2 weeks apart. By the time you actually looked at all the stats and everything before, I don't follow horse racing that much.
But the odds, you know, what is it? Kentucky Derby, then the Belmont, I think?
Yep. And then it's the Preakness.
And, or the Preakness and then the Belmont. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, the winner at the Kentucky Derby.
Good call. I couldn't remember Preakness off the top of my head.
Goes to, you know, to the Preakness, and all of a sudden everybody's going to start voting for the horse that won.
Of course.
The Kentucky Derby.
This so was Vegas, a little bit, but he had sireage from Secretariat and shit like that. There was a lot of things going in his favor.
Right. But what I'm telling you is that the sports books change the odds based on people's betting patterns.
Right, because he won the Derby by 3 lengths. He won the Preakness by, which I think is the longer of the two. No, it's the shorter of the two. He won it by 8 lengths.
And then the Belmont's the longer one.
So I was going to bet Belmont by 2 lengths. 2 lengths or greater. And I was going to put $20 on it and come out $250. And I get there, I'm like, all right, so if I bet 20 and win, I make 30. Fuck this. I'm out. Yeah.
No, see, I don't. The very few times that I've bet horses, the first time was in was when I was stationed out in California. Oh, they had some kind of big race that we went out and did the opening ceremonies for, and you know, we got to hang out in the boxes for a little while. And I said, "Fucking, I'm going to throw $2 on a horse." Why not? Who's got the biggest odds? All right, this guy at 9-1. All right, give me that one. Why not? I lost. You know, so I said, fuck it. And I think that was the last time I bet on a horse for...
Length betting is actually the reason the mafia got out of fixing horse races.
Right.
When you could bet the length of the win, not even who won, but by how much it would win.
They don't do that anymore.
So if they fix 3 horses in the race and you figure, okay, those are probably the 3 fastest, and okay, I'm going to bet by 2 lengths or greater,
or less than one length on the line and shit like that, the Mafia would still lose money because
nice.
They couldn't directly fix the race so that nobody could win money.
Right. No, they don't do that anymore. But recently, the last time I bet was actually out at the Downs before they closed down the OTB.
Mm-hmm.
I went in there and I was just bored and I had, like $100. And threw down money on a trifecta and hit it.
Which is three horses, right?
Which is three horses. You pick them first, second, third.
Nice.
And they have to come in the order that you pick them. And I don't know. It hit, and my $2 bet turned into like $600 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So then I took that over to the boat and played poker for 8 more hours and ended up like tripling the money on that. And that's pretty much the last time I've ever played cash games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that was, 8 years ago. Since then, pretty much, if I'm going to go to a casino or something like that, I'm gonna play in like a tournament where I pay $20-$40 and get a stack of, you know, chips.
Me personally, that's the best way. That's the best way to play poker, is tournament style. Cash games are fun, but man, I get the most reward.
Cash games are fun if you have a lot of money
or a lot of time.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I said. You know, that night, matter of fact, I played poker for I don't know, probably 8 hours. Probably went until about 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And for 7 of those 8 hours, I pretty much just broke even.
Yeah.
And then the last hour, everybody was starting to leave. And the more people that left, the hotter my hand got. And then it finally got to the point where it was like me and one dude. I wasn't even looking at my...
Great, heads up.
Yeah. I wasn't even looking at my cards anymore. I got so hot on the cards. You know, the flop would come down there and say, fuck it, call.
Yeah.
Whatever he bet, I called. And I think I won something like 12 hands in a row. And jeez. Literally was not,
time to go home. Time to go home.
Well, he finally gave up. I mean, I didn't even have time to stack the chips I was winning so much. Didn't help that he was drunk. But,
I know. I try my best to never drink.
Matter of fact, that's what bought the last laptop that I bought.
Nice.
Of course, that's when, you know, laptops were still $1,000 at Best Buy.
Yeah, I've had bad experiences drinking and playing cards. I don't do it.
Yeah, I don't. I might have
a beer
and nurse it, you know, or a beer an hour, you know, that kind of thing. Even playing tournament style, you know.
Most of the time when I've been smashed out of my mind playing poker, I usually fuck it all up. I can't play drunk.
Yeah, no, I can't either. And I've never played poker drunk.
My e-time where I turned $15 into $250 was really fun. Another guy at the same craps table in like 3 hours because we were both rolling turned $200 into $1,500.
Nice.
I couldn't make as much because I was kissing my sister on the bets, but he was actually betting aggressively and winning. I think we hit like 6 midnights in 20 throws, which was nice because he was betting midnight. He's like, all right, I'm betting midnight. Hit it, kid. I love you, kid.
I had one time playing craps on the table. Matter of fact, it was the first time I ever played craps and I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. And, you know, so guys were teaching me at the table as I was playing.
Uh-huh.
And somehow I managed to turn $20 into like $1,500.
Yep.
In like a half an hour.
And you had no idea what the fuck was going on.
Exactly. Then I made the mistake of going home and actually figuring out how to play the game a little bit. And I haven't done that good since.
There's a guy I talked to on the phone at AT&T one time, and he was saying he rarely lost at the crap table. And I was like, we were just chatting while I was fixing his shit. And he would go to Vegas because he had...
Rule number one, stay away from the middle of the table.
Well, he didn't do that.
Right. That's what I said. Rule number one, if you want to win at craps, stay away from the middle of the table.
He'd pull out like a...
Craps has some of the best odds in the casino if you kind of know what you're doing.
He was some sort of senior executive at some sort of company or something, but he would go to Vegas every month on a weekend and he'd pull out $1,000.
Right.
And his personal system was he would bet the Fibonacci sequence, which is if he bet $5 and lost, he would then next hand bet $10. And if he lost there, he would bet 15. Then he would bet 25. Then he would and the sum of the two previous numbers. So when he finally hit, he would make back all the money he lost plus 5.
Right.
Or plus 10 or plus 15 and come up ahead. Then immediately reset the sequence and throw out $5. He's like, it doesn't matter where you bet on the board. As long as you follow that sequence and you bring like a decent haul, you'll win 70% of the time.
You got to have a stack of money to be able to do
that. Said
you have to be able to absorb the loss before you hit. Yeah.
He said you'd pull out like $1,000 to $1,500. You go there with that. You do that. And you'll win. You'll come out ahead at least $1,700. He's like, I get comped a room four times out of five trips to Vegas. Yep. And I'm like, oh, okay.
The one,
I don't even book the hotel room anymore until I know if I'm up or down at the table, because they just give you the hotel room now.
They want you there so you win their money back.
Yeah, they
want
to try to win their money back. Yeah. And a matter of fact, if they comp you a room and you don't continue betting. Well, if they comp you a one-night room, you don't have to. But if they comp you multiple nights room and you stop betting after the first night...
They'll kick you out.
They'll kick you out.
We need the room. For who?
Right.
It's Tuesday!
But, no, the first time it was one of those, you know, a combination of not knowing how to play, guys teaching me how, and then basically, you know, I'm telling you, you know, to play the odds, first of all. You know, say you put $10 down on the line, and then the point comes up. Then you put $15 behind that, and you're playing the odds. And then you can pick a couple of
numbers or
point numbers.
Yeah.
And really, all you're doing on the odds is, you know, it's the same as the line bet. It's just got better odds. You're hoping that he hits the point before he hits a seven. You know.
Right.
And then you play a couple. I usually played like 5 and 10 or something like that, you know, just for shits and grins. But other than that, that's pretty much all I did. I didn't do a whole lot of the other, none of the middle stuff, because the odds suck. You know, though, yeah, you can get 35 to 1 on this. Yeah, but it only hits like 1 out of 100 times.
Right, yeah. me personally, I've never been a big fan of allowing that much to chance on a game. I know the game is insulated to be. It's just dice
again. Again, that's one of the craps. Is one of those games. If you know how to play, you can limit the house edge, and just as many times as not break even or come out ahead.
See, the thing I hate about blackjack, because it's the best odds in the house, is a statistic that comes when you're sitting there with the dealer. When it's you and the dealer and you follow like different betting systems and shit, it's the best odds in the house. Or you do what I do and you go up $100 something, and then immediately two people sit down in the shoe. You don't know anything's wrong. They haven't said anything yet. They haven't done anything yet. And they get their hands, and it's like, especially down at the aisle, it was two redneck-looking pieces of shit. And you're like, all right, maybe they know what they're doing.
No, the worst thing about blackjack is when you got a shitty third base.
Yeah.
You have any idea what I'm talking about?
No. Nope.
Third in the shoe?
No, the last guy before the dealer.
Yeah. Right,
that's what I'm saying.
He takes all of his bets, and then the dealer has to do the whatever the rules of the house say. You know, 16 and under, he has to take a hit. Hard 17 and over, he has to stand. Here's the situation. Dealer showing a 4. Third base has a king 6.
Okay.
Does he hit?
I wouldn't in that circumstance.
Right.
You let the dealer have most chance?
Matter of fact, let's see. Third base has a king 2. Dealer showing a 4.
Hmm. I still.
The answer is no. You never take that bet.
Yeah, no. I would still not do that because it.
Because there's a 40% chance that the dealer's going to bust.
Yeah, you just let you let them have the most chance to drop the highest cards on that. In
rather than you bust and then the dealer whips out an eight. Yeah, or, exactly. Pardon me, whips out a four or a five or some shit.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you'll get that third base that'll play. You know, the answer to third base. Is that if the dealer is showing a hand that he's likely to bust on, you don't take a card.
It's usually 13 or more, yeah.
Especially if he's been throwing a lot of out of low cards to the guys coming up.
Oh, the guy next to me just hit 14 and he got a 3. I'm going to stand. Then the rednecks sit down on the shoe, and they're hitting like hard 15s and shit like that. And you're like, are you fucking crazy? Yeah.
I've lost more money on blackjack.
He's showing a 4. Why are you hitting a hard 15? Why are you yelling at me? You just lost all of our money.
I've lost more money at the table to shitty third baseman. I don't play anymore blackjack unless I can play third base. Now, granted, you do take the hit. Because, okay, here, Pete, you're playing third base. You got two aces. Dealer showing a 6.
I have two aces, and he's showing a 6. Why wouldn't I split aces?
On third base.
Why wouldn't I split if he's showing a 6?
I know. Now, the rest of it, all the way coming up to you, there's been no face cards thrown. Do you take one for the team, or do you go ahead and split them and hope that you get the high cards and he gets a?
Well, I mean, that situation, I don't really lose anything for splitting, and that is a team. If I split and hit one and soak up the 10, I can hit the other ace. I can actually stack up the other ace with a couple of low cards, then stand on it, then let him take the next 10.
Hopefully. And that's the kind of situation.
Or I'll hit 221s and I win and everybody else might lose, but
exactly. And that's the kind of situation that you run into at third base is those I really should if I was playing anywhere else on the table, I should do this. But based on especially if you're playing single it's different if you're playing single deck versus six deck tables.
I don't think it's selfish to split there, though. You can make a lot more plays on the split than you can if you kept it solid.
Right. But like I said, it is also different if you're playing single deck versus six deck
shooter. Right. Yeah, of course.
Because single deck, you can, you know, if nothing but low cards has come out and you're playing single deck, you don't split those.
No.
Granted, you are probably going to hit, but everybody else at the table is going to kill you when the dealer also hits.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the other reason when I go to play back blackjack, I try to sit at a table.
With if he did all low cards and I have double aces, and he's showing a 4?
A 6.
A 6? He's got a stand on hard 17?
Uh-huh.
If nothing but low cards came out before that, I would stand.
Yeah, he has got a 6. He is going to take a card regardless of what he has underneath there.
If nothing came out higher than an 8,
right.
I would stand.
Right.
Because the likelihood of that face card being next, or the 10 or face card being next, is extremely high. Even if we lost, it was the right play to make.
Right. Most anybody.
If he threw out a 9 or a 10 anywhere earlier, I'd fucking split and play it a little more aggressively.
Right. See, most anybody there, Matt, would go, pocket aces.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or pocket sixes. What the fuck
are you doing? And again, splitting isn't the wrong answer, but the safest answer, if it was nothing but low cards, is just leave it alone.
Mm-hmm.
Take the 12.
Or pocket nines. You dumbass. You never split a winning hand.
Mm-hmm.
You got 18. He's showing a 6. What the hell are you doing? Yeah.
Stand.
Oh, I've seen people split nines. It pisses me off. Oh, it pisses me off.
I've seen them split.
Oh, 2 9s. I'm going to split.
I've seen them split kings, too.
Hit 3, hit 4. Well, there goes low cards. Thanks, dick.
The answer, Matt, you never split a winning hand. If you got, see.
If you have anything above like 15 or 16, you don't split it?
No. If your hand on its own can beat
the dealers?
The dealers.
Okay, you don't split? Okay, cool. Gotcha.
Pocket sixes, you'll split.
Yeah, if the dealer's showing a six, well, no matter what the card is below your 18 already beats it.
I take that back, Matt. If you have pocket six, here you go, Pete. Pocket sixes, dealer showing a nine.
I would actually split that.
Really? I'd hit it. Because if you split it, you're only getting one card each. The best you can get is 16.
What was he showing?
A nine.
Oh, he's showing a nine. Oh, no. Yeah, I'd hit. You're really likely to bust, but right. At least the dealer's guaranteed to bust.
Right. See, the difference there is you've got a 12. You can take a hit and hope you get a nine or an under.
Mm-hmm.
Which is more than half the deck.
Right.
Or you can split it, and you're only getting one card on a split.
And you might get two face cards.
Mm-hmm.
And then the dealer can't hit
and then get a face card. And then you're sitting on 16, and he's showing a 9. So, nines are dangerous cards with the dealer. Because usually he's going to have at least 19, or 18, 19, 20.
Yeah. And your only hope is that it's...
Wait, if you were third in shoe and you had...
No, I was just saying in general. I wasn't necessarily saying third baser.
If I was third base and I got double sixes, I'd split.
Right.
If he's showing a nine.
Well, again, that would depend on what type of blackjack I was playing. If I was playing, you know, single shoe or a single stack or a single deck, six deck.
Because if he flips and it's a two, I'm fucked anyway. If he flips a three and he, you know, draws out, the likelihood of him winning that hand is a lot higher if I'm third in shoe. Doesn't even matter the previous cards that came up.
Well, it kind of does. Especially if you're playing single deck.
You very rarely have single deck blackjack at a...
Not in Vegas. You see really? It all the time in Vegas. Yeah, but usually the limits are a lot higher.
I was going to say, because that makes the probability of actually counting cards in there, even though they keep track of that shit. If you're single deck, it's so easy.
No, it's actually easier.
That's what I'm saying.
With the six deck
really?
Than it is with the single deck, yeah.
Okay.
Because you're...
The odds are a lot more static.
Okay.
Have you ever...
More numbers to keep track of, higher probabilities.
No. More cards come out before the shuffle.
Right.
See, because the way card counting works is you go on all of the cards that you see at the table.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is dealt to you, them, everything. And anytime you see a card, you know, if it's a nine... 9, 10, or an ace, you count up one. If it's a 6 through a deuce, I think?
You subtract
one. And then what it is once your count gets to a certain point, means that there are less face cards in the deck, you adjust your odds accordingly. Or there are more face cards in the deck, you adjust your betting patterns accordingly. To how many cards are left. See, on single deck, you can't do that
because cards they shuffle
every hand. As opposed to a shoe when they got six decks in the big shoe, they may do 20 hands before they shuffle the...
Yeah.
That's why the odds basically remain static.
Yeah, for longer periods of time, yeah. Makes sense.
Right, because, well, until they shuffle the shoe, all of the cards that have already been dealt are gone. So you're counting for the cards that are left in the shoe.
Right.
Static means that at predictable levels of interference.
Right. Yeah.
The single deck, the static is higher because they're going to redeal.
Right.
So the face cards being 1 and 3 and the low cards being 2 out of 3 is nearly permanent.
Mm-hmm.
In the six deck shoe, that's when it goes up and down dramatically because that's what it's not static odds at that point. That's when the card counting really kicks in.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, it absolutely does.
Okay,
but
I'll never do it in Vegas because I actually like to play.
Oh, I'm not gonna card count either.
I'm not gonna fucking do that shit down in Vegas.
You have to be.
You have to be really, really, really good,
fast, and really good.
Yeah, because they watch that shit. They watch for that shit, and they.
It's not that they. Well, they do watch it, but it's more on can you actually keep up?
Yeah.
And know what to do when you're seeing, when you got this particular.
Plus, you need some form of table control too.
Uh huh.
Because if people stand up, sit down, it fucks everything up. They come in, they play three hands, they bust out and leave. Well, shit. Now I have to adjust again.
And then somebody else comes and sits down and plays for 20 hands and starts fucking shit up.
Right. Usually card counting isn't done by one person.
It's a whole team.
It's done by a team.
Yeah.
Unless it's like 3 a.m. and he's guaranteed to have the table to himself. Then it might be one guy. But yeah, normally it's two or three people.
At least. Yeah.
Because then even if people stand up and sit down a lot, you can still control the deck somewhat.
Okay.
That scene, I know the MIT guys did it differently, where they had like four people at different tables and shit like that, but that's not really...
What they were doing there was they were keeping track of four separate tables and the numbers at all the tables so they could push in one person into that table.
No, I know, and that's what kept things off. But then the problem remains that if someone comes over and sits down in that shoe, their system was fucked.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They'd almost have to get up, walk away, go to another casino for the night.
Yeah.
Yeah, the smartest counters, what they'll do is they'll have a team of like 20 people.
Yeah.
And they'll send a different group of two or three in each time. So you never see the same group of people in at the same time.
Yep.
Doing this.
I do like the movie 21.
Still eventually get caught.
Oh, yeah.
Usually.
Because Vegas knows what the fuck you're doing.
Yeah.
They have someone, just like they did in that movie 21, they have someone counting along right with you. And it's like, fuck that. The guy's fucking up.
Of course, a lot of it, too, depends on how cocky the card counter gets.
Yeah.
If this is something that you say do for 3 months and move on, your odds are you're not going to get caught.
Right.
But if you keep going back...
Yeah,
the casinos are gonna put two and two together and figure it out.
The other mistake, they're doing something on it, and the casino said if a pro card counter came in from overseas or even in the United States and they were actually a tourist, we'd have no fucking clue. If they went in and took in a show in the casino after they were done betting and shit, we'd probably not even look at them twice.
Right,
it's the guys that are super cautious and literally leave the casino that night. Or book a room for one night and then leave the next day and shit. Those are the guys that we start to flag and keep track of. If they came in and were like full tourists and stayed a week, you're a lucky strike.
Yeah.
3 weeks later, he comes into another casino and they have no idea who he fucking is.
Yeah. The best one hand I ever did. This was actually when I was mobilized down to Fort Riley. I was sending a unit out. And I got them on the plane, and they were flying overseas, and I was driving back to Waterloo. And I stopped at the boat in Kansas City.
Oh. I gotta pee.
Oh, stopped at the boat in Kansas City, and I decided I'm going to play some Pai Gow. I like playing Pai Gow. It's a game that you can play forever with a little bit of money.
Yeah. Slow as shit game.
Right. It's slow, and 8 times out of 10, you're going to push and get your money back. You know? So... Kinda. The odds are actually better than a penny slot. But I also play I play the junk bet. So, you know, I'm throwing the house odds out the window, but I enjoy it. And I got down, I took I think $150, and I got down, I had $13 I think left on me. So I put 5 in the circle and 8 in the junk bet and then pulled a straight flush.
Nice.
You know, walking $800 on the junker. And I'm like, all right, I'm out of here. And they're like, and the dealer's like, yeah, I don't blame you. You know, because I mean, this was pretty much.
Isn't it the best 3-card hand or 4-card hand?
5-card.
5-card out of like
7.
7 that the dealer can make that you have to beat.
No, what it is you get 7 cards, and you have to make a high hand and a low hand, a 2-card hand and a 5-card hand.
Right, okay, there it is. Right. And then you win on the junk, too. Okay. Right.
And what it is...
to make your money, you have to win both.
Yeah. Your high hand has to beat his high hand. Your 5-card hand has to beat his 5-card hand to win.
Right.
If it's 1-1, it's a push.
And you get your money back.
You get your money back.
If the dealer wins both, you lose your money.
Right. But the junk bet, you have to usually get 3 of a kind or better, and then you get paid odds, whatever the posted odds are, like 3-1 on a 3 of a kind. Some places say that you have to put the 5 cards in one hand in order to get paid off on the junk bet. Most places don't. You know, as long as you got the 5 cards and the 5-card or in the straight flush, it doesn't matter what order you put them in. There's 5 cards that make a 5-card flush. You'll get paid. And that's what happened here. So I ended up making like $800 on a $1,300 bet.
Nice.
But it was the last $13 that I had. It was literally, I had 1 foot out the door. I was sitting here on the table like this, just waiting to lose the money. And I was going to leave. And I hit the straight flush, and I'm like,
I'm going to collect that and get the fuck out of here.
And I put it down, and I said, I'm out.
Yep.
And the dealer's like, don't blame you. So I call, the wife. And I go, yeah, I just won $800 on the boat. She goes, good, because I just had to take the cat to the vet. Oh, there goes my $800. Yeah, it was like a $600 vet bill.
Man, I want to go down to Vegas for one weekend and just sit in the casino. Just probably sit in like the Rio poker room all weekend. Just to do it. Just to do it once.
I played poker in Vegas once, and I sat down at a cash game. And I lost $100 in about 5 minutes.
Yeah, because that's where all the guys go down there to fucking play.
This wasn't even like the big on the strip poker house. This was out in Henderson.
Oh shit!
At the Sunset whatever.
The piece of shit casino.
Right. Even there, you know, I'm just like, it was one of those deals where my flush got beat by a full house.
Yeah, gross.
You know. And I also sat down at a no limit game.
Ooh.
You know, instead of a.
Like a four, like a 1-2 like or a 3-6. Like a 1-2 or a 3.
Yeah. So, oops.
As I said, also another one of my dreams is to get the. And we've talked about this before, is have enough money to go just sit down at the World Series of Poker just to give it a run, go for a ride.
Yeah, screw all the other stuff. We just need to come up with $25,000 so we can sit in at the main game.
Yep.
You know, might be done in 10 minutes, but.
I don't give a fuck. Now, I could give two shits.
Forget your hoodies and your sunglasses.
No, fuck.
I never do all that.
Shit. I would put sunglasses on.
I never did.
Don't. It's so. I hate it when I see it. I'm like, it is so cringe.
Yeah.
The only thing I have is my card protector, a little challenge coin that I had from the Marines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that I set on top of the cards. But everybody does that.
One guy in the World Series of Poker finally said, "I don't wear sunglasses to look cool at the table. I don't wear it to block my poker face."
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the thing. They're not trying to
I don't do anything. Cool. There's so many lights around that fucking table for the cameras. You're going to go blind if you're sitting in front of the dealer because the lights come in over his head. He's like, you'll notice that the people that sit off to the sides, they rarely have sunglasses on. The people that are sitting in front of the dealer, they will bring sunglasses just for that.
Now,
and I'm like, that's why the other guy sitting at the little bullshit tables during the tournament wearing sunglasses, you're like, you're a cock.
Yeah.
Well, some of those guys are just known for it. You know, it's their costume.
This is my cool thing.
Right.
I'm so cool.
Now, I did play in the World Series of Poker back before
it got
long
super
before
big.
It was on TV.
Yeah. I mean,
this was 1993.
Yeah, like a few years after, back when there was like 500 or 600 people that would show up for the World
Series.
Right,
and the buy-in, I think, was...
like $5,000 or $10,000 or something like that?
No, I don't even think it was that. I think it was $1,000 or something like that to get in. And, you know, I was in the Marines and I didn't spend any money, so I said, hey, guys, let's go down to Vegas. I didn't even know the World Series of Poker was there. You know, we got a 96 or a four-day weekend.
Yeah.
And I said, fuck it, let's go to Vegas. You know, it's only a six-hour drive. Let's go.
Yeah.
We get in there and I got all the signs up saying, hey, World Series of Poker. Poker. Let's go there.
Yeah.
So we went in. How much is the buy-in? $1,000. All my buddies went,
no.
I believe in myself enough to give it a shot. Let's do this.
No. Well, my buddy, you know, most of them are like, I only got $1,000, dude. You know, that kind of thing, you know. And I'm like, fuck it. I got a ride home.
Yeah. If I got food guaranteed if I fuck it up. I got to ride home.
Well, this was still the days in Vegas where you could get the $1.99 steak dinner, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'd be in the same boat. I'm like, let's put this fucking money on the line. Right. I'm going to take a shot at this.
Right. So I got in and I said, you know what? Fuck it. Let's play. And it wasn't, I don't even think it was 600. Well, it might have been about 600,000 somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Fuck it. You know, and I said, all right, starts tonight. And I'm like, all right. Went down there and actually did pretty, I made it to the second to the last table.
Nice.
Ended up walking out of there with $30,000.
Wow.
Of course, then again, here I am 20-year-old Marine with $30,000 in his pocket? In Vegas?
Yeah.
All right, guys, let's go.
Let's go. Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Of course, then the World Series is only 2 days, you know. Mm-hmm. But no, I went through that money so damn fast.
No, I would have too, man.
I don't think I had even any of it left 3 months later. And I don't remember, like, buying anything substantial. It was just one of those, hey, guys, let's go out to dinner. I'm buying, you know. Yeah. Let's go out to the bar. I'm buying, you know.
Booze, strip club, and food.
Right.
That's like that when I read that that
news probably article. A couple of hookers.
That's like when I read that news
not article. For me, but
it's when I read
Greg,
that.
Greg, while you were playing poker, I racked up a $1,500 bill with his pimp. So
can you hook me out? No, I actually didn't. I didn't spend a whole shitload of it down there in Vegas. Most of it was when I got back to L.A.
Oh, I don't doubt that.
Hey, let's go to L.A. Let's go to the make it rain. He'll be making it rain before.
Yeah.
Before it was cool, you know. Actually, you know, it wasn't even that. You know, it was just going to a bar and dropping $20 tips for a beer, you know, that kind of thing. You know, fuck it. I can. You know, I'll get good service all night. You spent $700 at the bar. Fuck it. I got $30,000.
Who gives a shit?
It was like Brewster's Millions, you know?
Yeah. No, I know exactly.
Like, at the end of the 3 months, I looked at my bank account and I was like,
shit. Totally. For like the first 15 grand, I would just burn through it. Just burn it.
Then you look at your bank statement and you're like, oh.
No, yeah. Mine was literally hitting the ATM one day and it denied me. And I was like,
what?
Oh, really? Did I go through all that money?
Yeah.
I don't want to say that that's nothing, but that's nothing. Because the Ho-Chunk natives in Wisconsin, especially around Toma, they have a chance to buy into a mutual trust fund bullshit with a casino and a local bank in the state.
Right.
And when it matures, which is when they hit 25, they can either draw it when they're 18 or draw it when they're 25. If they draw it when they're 18, it's $100,000.
Right.
When they draw it when they're 25, it's matured into $250,000.
Okay. I'm guessing a lot of them probably pull it out at 18. Some of them, the smarter ones at least, use it for like college money.
They're all fucking idiots because they pull it out at 25, and 90% of them, the first thing they do is go on long-ass trips where they blow. Like Roach's brother, David, got his. And I think it was six in Ground Round. We got our truck twice a week, and both times we got our truck that week, we ran out of New York strip steaks because he came there for dinner. He came there for lunch and got a New York strip steak, which was $30. Then he came there for dinner and got two New York strip steaks, which is right. And they're like, you just blew $90. And I'm like, I guess you got $250,000. But you did that seven times a week. You just
right. No, I didn't go that far. No, like I said, I made that money last a little while. I'm guessing it was somewhere around 3 to 6 months or
then,
something like that.
Then you realize that he was not addicted to drugs, but he loved drugs. So right. Weed, ecstasy, acid, all of it. He was going in every weekend. They were going to the rave in Madison, Wisconsin to see a new DJ and shit. And I'm like, my niece was hanging out with him. I'm like, so it's all fun and games right now. And then my niece started dating him. I'm like, are you fucking serious?
No, knock that shit off. Not because he's a fucking Ho-Chunk. He's just a moron.
You guys just don't like him because he does drugs. I'm like,
right. No.
No, I don't like him because you're only dating him because he has money right now.
Yeah, you are a fucking stereotype.
I'm like,
stereotype.
I have no problems with David. If I saw David right now, I'm like, David, I'm sorry. My niece is using the fuck out of you.
That might have been part of it with me is that I knew that I had a fallback. I was living in the barracks. I didn't have to worry about a place to live. I didn't have to worry about food. I worked a half a mile from where I lived so I could walk in Southern California so I could fucking walk it.
Yeah. You know?
So I didn't really worry about money.
Yeah. No.
Even when I didn't have money, you know, I'm like,
even at the worst, I'm still going to get fed. Yeah.
Well, no, because any time that I was in the Marines, other than training, I was on what's called commuted rations because of the unit that I was in. We can never guarantee that we're going to be able to actually use the chow hall because we might be out on the road or something. So they would give us separate rations.
Okay.
Which was like an extra, you know, couple hundred bucks a month or something like that. But if we went to the chow hall on base, we had to pay for it.
That's a decent trade-off, I guess.
But it wasn't that much. I mean, you even then...
You could still dig out I the could, change no, in your yeah, fucking...
No, I mean, literally, I could go to breakfast at the chow hall for 95 cents.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ours was they paid $5 and for breakfast, $7 for dinner. But dinner included the entree, vegetable, and mm-hmm. starch side.
Yeah.
Which you had two choices of entree, which was usually like cheeseburger or a giant-ass hot dog or something like that, plus French fries or...
Right. See, that's
big-ass chicken, right. fried chicken sandwich, or you could right. get like lasagna and right. all the sides and everything. Then you got the salad bar.
Right.
Fruit, canned fruit.
But you got to remember...
dessert.
But you got to remember, I was in before they privatized a lot of mm-hmm. that stuff. So this was when... This was actual...
Back when they had the fucking Marines cooks.
Actually cooking a shit.
Yeah.
So I would pay my 95 cents and I could eat whatever the fuck I wanted. They didn't have the...
Yeah.
The limits on that they...
We don't... They had unlimited everything but the entree. They could come up for extra mashed potatoes and... So and
yes, but we didn't even have that.
If we were really slow and we could tell we weren't going to get like the full number or something, they could come up again and get extra fries and shit. Mm-hmm. And no, we were nice like that. No. But still, it was a shitload of food. That same amount of food anywhere else, any restaurant, would have cost you a minimum. Even the bullshit family restaurant down the road, in the little dinky portions they got, would have been a minimum of $15. And the guys are bitching, I mean, $7. I'm like, do you realize you get unlimited everything but the main entree?
Right. Yeah.
Right. And you got to remember back when I was doing this. It was
see 90- fuckers taking five pieces of cake. Mm-hmm. Like, where else are you getting that, honky? Yeah. Huh?
It was 95 cents breakfast and I think $1.85 or $1.90 for lunch and dinner.
Yeah. You can go turn in some
it
cans
was pretty,
if you needed
no,
to.
No, well, not in Southern California. But it was pretty easy to go, okay, it's going to cost me $5 a day to eat at the chow hall. It's 15 days between pay periods, 15, 30, 45, 60, 75.
$75.
$75.
Shoved in a coffee can.
I had an envelope, but yeah. Literally, I put $75 in an envelope in my barracks room. And that was my, I ran out of fucking money, food money.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to be able to get smokes or anything like that, but granted, I was only paying like a
you're going to the fucking commissary. And it was like $20 for a carton.
The best thing.
Wasn't even that.
The best thing about our.
At one point in Okinawa, I was getting cartons of cigarettes for $8, and that was before they had the $2 coupon on the damn thing. So,
the best thing about our dining hall is when the groups that came through that had to pay, which not all of them had to pay. Some of them, they were just assigned to eat there. It was free food, and their NCO or CO would be like, we paid for the food. You're fucking eating at the chow hall. You're eating at the dining hall.
Oh, so like what Frank would do when he would go
D-fact.
Up to
you're eating
when
at
he
the
would
D-fact.
Go up to McCoy with your fucking unit, and he was like, "We got a goddamn kitchen. I'm going to order some food for the goddamn cooks."
No. You were over in the in the building next to the big.
We are the NCO Academy,
right behind the you know, you come in, you got the E Club and all of that stuff. They're McCoy's.
Yeah.
And then you go catty corner to that, and you have the big training center, which kind of looks like an asterisk type building. And then you guys are behind that in the NCO Academy, right?
I don't remember an asterisk shaped building. We were on the eastern ass end,
right? I know where you're talking about. I'm just trying to. I don't remember.
State Police Academy. Do you remember that?
Right. I know where you're talking.
Okay.
About. No, what he's talking about is they actually had an actual dining facility there.
Yeah. Okay.
Where he cooked the food.
Oh, you're talking about the hotel, the asterisk shaped building.
No.
Oh.
It looked kind of like a hotel, but it's not. There's actually training. I think they called it the Artec building.
Never been in it.
Okay. I know, but you've seen it, though. The big dark brown building.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
I had to go there a lot and they had a DFAC in there, too. And then. He had the one at the NCO Academy. The NCO Academy people shouldn't have been paying.
It was only groups.
I mean, the students shouldn't have been paying.
They didn't actually have a ton of NCO classes there all the time. But this was, I don't know the exact circumstances of the groups that had to pay, but there was like one particular group of 60 people that showed up there once a month, and they had to pay when they came in to eat. The rest of them, if they were assigned there for any type of training or drill or anything else, the unit would just pay for the kitchen. We got our orders. We were told to expect this number and maybe minus 10 or 20. They're like, are they going to show up? Like, the NCOs are directing them to eat here.
Right. See, usually what would happen...
And then our philosophy is, we'll pay it anyway if they show up or not, so it gives us a
shit. See, usually what would happen if I took my unit up there, I would actually write a check to them ahead of time, not to, you know, whoever this boss is. I would say, okay, I'm going to have 50 people in here eating three meals a day for 3 days. And then they will quote me a price, and I would...
Write a check for it.
Write a check for it. And that's how they got paid. And then all my guys just went in there and ate.
Nice.
You know.
And every once in a while, you'd have a unit, an NCO or a unit commander come in and actually take a look at the numbers and see how many of his guys are eating. And usually if it was within like 80 or 90%, the number never went up or down. But if he came in and saw that only 50% of his guys came to the chow hall, he'd be yelling at him.
Well, most of the time, if we went up there for training, we drove up there on a bus. And it was either you eat at the damn DFAC or you don't eat. Cause, but what you're talking about is when I would take a big unit up there.
Yeah. With the cooks and all of that.
No, this is when we would actually be back in the barracks buildings, you know, in the shitty ass, you know what I'm talking about?
No, I know. That's most of that fucking base.
Right. But.
Which it's no Fort Bragg, but.
Not even close. But you'll notice in the center of those, like every 10 buildings, there's a little kitchen. And that's what I would do. If my unit that I took up there had cooks assigned to it.
They were fucking cooking.
They were fucking cooking.
Yes.
But we didn't actually do that through them. We actually did that through base supply.
That's their unit.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
the unit, I would actually go down to the opposite corner of the base from where he was at. And I would go on, I would pick up like the 10-pound industrial Sam's Club size cans of corn. And
yeah, you motherfuckers are cooking. Right. You got a job.
The number six cans.
Right.
You got a fucking job. Yeah, this isn't, we're going to teach you how to make sure, we're going to make sure you can do your fucking job too. Yeah. No.
Right. Because most of the time, you know, we would do that for a weekend drill. But a lot of times, you know, like the transportation company, I had three assigned cooks. They're cooking.
Yeah.
And they hated me.
They thought when you guys went on drill that it was going to be like a fucking vacation. No, well, motherfuckers, you're doing your job.
Usually, see, that was the funny thing. The, up there in Waterloo, we had a kitchen in the drill center.
Yeah.
And then when I took over as the UA, I ordered food. I said, fuck it. I got three assigned cooks. I have a kitchen.
Because honestly, those cooks would be doing jack shit if they weren't cooking.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Right. Yeah.
And I ordered food, and I said, here's your food. Feed the company.
Yeah.
You got to do lunch every day. That's all they had to do was lunch, you know, during normal drill weekend. Oh, they hated me because what happened before is that they just ordered Hy-Vee. And then our cooks, literally all they did all drill
weekend.
Was
serve the fucking food.
They didn't even do that. Hy-Vee would serve the food. All they did was make sure people signed in.
Oh, what the fuck?
And they literally did nothing.
What the fuck?
So the first month, I didn't even run this past the CO. I just made this
just fucking did it.
Well, I made the assumption. I have cooks. I have a kitchen. I must need food.
Yeah. That seems like a pretty good assumption to me.
Right. So the CO comes in. His normal thing, because he actually lived in Des Moines. So he tended to come in Friday night and would crash at the hotel.
Yeah.
And we would get together, have a couple of beers, and talk about what was going to go on for the weekend.
Yeah.
You know, do a final run through the plan of the day and what's going to go on for training. Well, the first weekend he shows up and he calls me up and says, hey, man, I'm down at my hotel. Can you come down and we can run through all this stuff? So I grab all my paperwork and I run down there. He goes, all right. First thing he says to me, he says, what'd you get for lunch? Chicken breasts, corn, and mashed potatoes. He goes, where'd you get it from? The Army.
The Army makes fried chicken now?
That's... Yeah, he looked at me for a minute. He goes,
the Army's going to pre-fry it for us?
He goes, what?
Like, we got fucking cooks, man.
No, he looked and he goes, what? I said, well, sir, we have three assigned cooks to the unit, right? So we've got a gunnery sergeant or an E7, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I was not too far removed from the Marines.
Marines when you're, yeah.
I said, we got an E7, an E5, and an E4 that are assigned cooks. That's their MOS. That's all they do. That's all they're on the MTO for. I have a kitchen. So I ordered food, and they're going to cook it. And he goes, that's
the- No, he knows that they're going to cook it. It's the fight to get him to do it.
Exactly. Well,
because all he has to do is make it an order, and they have to do it.
So he goes,
I bet his next response, they're going to hate you. But
pretty much
do it.
He just kind of does that nose laugh, like, and I'm like, what? And he goes, you'll find out tomorrow morning. So tomorrow morning rolls around. You know, we get into formation.
Ivy's sitting there like, what the fuck? No. We haven't gotten our phone call yet.
I actually did get that call.
Hey, we were wondering, it's that time of the month. And,
yeah, we were wondering why you haven't ordered your $700.
We can offer you competitive pricing. And
right. And Drill comes around and he goes, all right, guys. Welcome to another fabulous weekend of drill. We're gonna we're gonna do a convoy op, with the vehicles. Maintenance is gonna do their PM like normal, and for lunch,
I can just imagine
Sergeant First Class Jones. What are we having for lunch? And Sergeant First Class Jones is just sitting there in a corner going, "You motherfucking piece of shit." Don't know yet, sir. We haven't ordered it yet. Well, guess what, Sergeant First Class Jones? You're cooking. What? You're cooking.
No, I heard the word. What do you mean, sir?
He looks at the captain.
What is this cocking?
Right. He looks at the captain and he goes, what do you mean I'm cooking, sir?
You're doing your damn job today, yeah. Sergeant. First Sergeant.
Sergeant First Class.
Sergeant First Class.
Captain says, go look in the fridge. There's a shit ton of chicken in there. Cook it. Have it ready by 11:30. Those cooks, Captain says, all right, calls the First Sergeant back forward, to release the company. Company, dismissed. The cooks.
Yep.
They're in the kitchen. They're pulling
shit. What time was this?
8 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, my God. What a bunch of babies. How many men in the unit?
144.
Oh, my God. What a bunch of babies.
That's why Frank's
like, I can have that meal ready in 40 minutes, and I'm the only cook. I've done that shit. Chicken breast, seasoning, on a pan, in the oven. Again. Go. 25 minutes. Fucking done.
But you got to remember, the last time these guys...
No salad, no nothing fancy, no desserts. Just food. Just plain old entree, starch, and veggie.
Your typical, yeah.
What a bunch of pussies.
Again, the last time these guys had probably cooked for more than like a burger for themselves was when they went to cook school however long ago. So
what a bunch of fucking pansies.
They hadn't even inventoried the kitchen.
Sorry, then they're not pussies. They're morons.
That's part of it, too. And I think that's the reason why.
Or to use the Frank version of it, they're ignorant.
I think what happened is that the former UA was a buddy with the cook. One of those deals where.
How much did the food cost you? That's what I'm curious about. That's what I'm saying. The money you saved. Because if it was like around $700 for Hy-Vee to cater it, then that means that
it would have actually been $700 a day.
To have them cater it.
To have them cater
but
it.
Buying
and
the
I think
food.
I spent about $300 in food.
For 3 days.
2 days.
2 days.
And you actually had the cooks do their fucking job that they were assigned to do.
Well, yeah. Normally, they would just get farmed out to do something else. And granted, that first month's meal was kind of rough.
But
mainly because they had never used that kitchen before. That was part of the problem, Pete. They didn't know where half the shit was in the kitchen.
That doesn't fucking matter. You got 3 hours to cook chicken.
I know. They had never... They weren't even sure what they had in the kitchen.
You fit it on a normal size, but even if it was a single convy oven, it's still 3 trays, 24 breasts per tray. It's more than enough time.
Yeah, there was.
There's like 3 cigarette breaks in there. You fucking kidding me with this shit?
There was, but they had an inventory. They had to do an inventory first.
Because 4 gallons of mashed potatoes.
They had never even inventoried the kitchen.
Did you buy a whole potatoes? That would have been the kink in the butt. If you bought the giant cans or boxes of mashed, easy peasy. If you bought the actual potatoes, that would have been a nightmare.
I think they came canned.
Can Matt, the dry can?
Right.
Yeah.
But the...
20 minutes of work.
But like I said, that wasn't the snafu the first month. The first month was they had literally never inventoried the kitchen. So he had to go get the list of... What did I actually sign for 10 years ago when I took over this position? A, is it still here? And B, does it work?
You mean he had to do his job.
Right.
While the other two people started to cook. Mm-hmm.
So,
Jesus.
So
what a bunch of
fucking
babies.
They're going through all that. Now, the way that the place is set up is that I have my office. I had the biggest office in the building, but that's just because I had... 140 guys worth of paperwork and training.
Yeah.
And I was responsible for all that. And the CEO's office was across the hall from me, but he didn't have a direct door. The only place that I could see from my office was in the kitchen.
Right.
Which was across this hall, you know?
These guys would have shit themselves if they had to do
what
we did like 4 times during the week, which is like during the week you'd have like 5 banquets, 30, 40, 50 people in each, and they all had different food assigned to them.
No.
One got tacos, the other one got chicken breasts, roast beef on another one. You're like, this is a fucking nightmare, and we made it work.
Right. The biggest problem with these guys wasn't their ability to cook or not to cook. The biggest problem was that they were allowed to skate.
Yeah.
For numerous years.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, that's what I'm talking about. It's like someone didn't actually make them do the fucking job that they were assigned to do.
So,
fuck
like
that.
So they go bust-assing into the kitchen, and, you know, they spend an hour and a half, like, knocking the dust off of the Burkle, you know, that kind of thing.
Cleaning it.
Getting the tarps off the machines and shit like that, maybe, but...
Exactly. They got
to
clean.
Those things are built to hose down. That's the other problem. You pull out the garden hose and you just.
They are.
Well, the pilot light went out.
But if you haven't used.
I know.
Room in 5 years. There's a little bit of prep you got to do.
Oh, of course. But what he's saying is even with that.
Right. Right.
No, I'm saying that even if you had a caveman mentality about it, you'd still get it fucking done.
Right. And they did. They did. But the funny thing was. Is normally on a drill weekend when they're actually out training.
Did you get them salt and pepper and shit too? Yeah. Like, okay, so you didn't just get 3 items of food and say cook
right.
it.
No, we got all the fixings and all that
seasonings
kind of shit
and shit.
Right.
Okay.
Now the funny thing is that normally on a drill weekend the inside of the building is usually relatively quiet. Especially at a transportation company because they're out on the vehicles or out in the shop, you know, which is a different building or out in the parking lot. And then the people running around the building are the admin guys, the maintenance management guys, which are basically admin guys for maintenance, you know.
Yeah.
We need to fix this vehicle. Okay. What parts do you need? This, this, and this. Okay. I'll go order them, you know. That kind
yeah.
of and the supply guys and the non-noise making guys.
Right.
And then the kitchen. There's pots and pans and forks and knives and shit just flying everywhere for like an hour while they're figuring out what they got.
I've been in those little kitchens. They're not that bad.
No, this one was actually dinky. It might have been half this room.
Makes it easier.
It does.
I don't care that actually helps.
It does, but there was 3 people, you know, running around. Again, 3 out-of-practice people running around in this room. So
that's the type of environment I train in with Dan Dutton. That's why I'd be back. I'm like, oh, I'm home. So, this half this room was the was the banquet hall of the enlisted club on Volk Field, which was my first assignment on these military contracts. There was two convey ovens, a flat top, and a stove top.
That's about all we had.
And we had to cook for 300 guys.
Well, and then I had my fridge, you know, to keep the...
Of course.
Right. But about an hour into them inventorying, Captain walks into my office, shuts the door, sits down, and just dies laughing for about a minute and a half.
I forgot. Our pans and all of our utensils fit into that space with room to stand in it. To cook it for 300 guys in that kitchen. That's why I'm like, this is fucking nothing. I know they're out of practice, but this was my first day walking in. I'm like, oh, we got more than enough to do this job.
Right. Well, the difference there is that it might have been your first day, but it wasn't everybody's first day at the same time.
No, that's true. I did have Dan.
This was literally
I did have the kitchen god on my side.
This was literally three guys that didn't have to do their job at all for 3 years.
He's the fucking Poseidon of the kitchen.
Right. So... he comes in, he shuts the door, and he starts cracking up laughing. The first sergeant, or not the first sergeant, but the well, he is the first sergeant, but he's also what they call a reserve on active duty.
Yeah,
I'm brain farting. But he's actually there all month with me, but he's active duty instead of a civilian like I am during the month.
Yeah.
AGR, that's what it is. Mm-hmm. Active Guard and Reserve. But he runs the training part of it, and then I do the admin part of it. And first sergeant's in there, and captain comes walking in and just starts dying laughing. He goes, "First sergeant, did you know about this?" "No, sir." "I found out this morning when you announced it at drill. Warrington didn't say anything to me about this."
Oh, you little shit.
So,
First Sergeant Wolverton's making me do my job.
No. I wasn't First Sergeant Wolverton. I was Sergeant Wolverton.
Oh.
I didn't tell the First Sergeant that I was going to make them do their job.
I don't see what the... I'm actually completely in agreement with you on this. I don't see what the fuck.
No, it was more. This was just more funny than.
Anything. Yeah, no, you know, absolutely.
Like
yeah.
I said, I'm not blaming them because they were allowed to skate. You know,
right?
It wasn't one of those where they necessarily chose to skate. I'm guessing what happened is 3 years ago we didn't have cooks, so they said okay, Hy-Vee, and then we got like one cook in.
This is where you run into an interesting dynamic, Matt, because this also happened in the kitchen.
But this was me coming.
Frank's decision could have backfired. Horribly.
And I could have killed 144 guys from ptomaine poisoning or something.
Or they could have not had the meal ready or anything like that, and they would have eventually had to order other food anyway. And both him and the sergeant first class could have gotten fucking, or first sergeant.
Yeah, for a waste of government funds.
Yeah. So that $300 is wasted, plus they had to order $500, $600 of food on top of it for both days or something like that. It could have backfired horribly. Right. And if the other guy decided not to do his job, you could have fucked Frank in the process too.
No,
if he intentionally screwed the pooch, both of you would have gotten chewed out because he could have been like, "I wasn't notified of this. I didn't have the inventory."
His job to be notified. No, he had the inventory. And
he would have gotten at least a slap on the wrist. Don't do that again.
Well, Frank. Yeah, that's probably about it. That's about all I would have got. But no, I had the inventory and I had the bill of sale to prove that he had everything that he needed. Because they send you a detailed packing list when they deliver that shit by refrigerated truck the day before. You
know? The only thing that would have sucked is if he didn't have the pans to do it. Literally the serving pans.
No, all of that stuff is actually in the kitchen. Part of the inventory that he signed for three years ago when he came to the unit.
If they had gone in and seen no pans in there and had to scramble to find some, that would have been...
No, I made sure that he had everything that he needed before I was going to make him do the job. It wasn't one of those.
How many yeah. deep hotel pans? Oh, we got 16 deep hotel, more than enough for 140 guys. Yeah.
Right. And
basically what you're saying is you did your job to the best of your ability and then made sure that they were going to be
able to at least try to do his job.
I'm still saying, I don't care if they're out of practice. This is like if you're a Marine, you're surrounded by 500 guys and you find three crates of claymore somewhere. Oh, we're going to be okay.
Right. Yeah. And I was perfectly willing.
I don't know exactly where I'm putting these right now.
Right.
But I know I could put them.
Right. See, because here's the funny thing. The first sergeant, during the month in his AGR status, is the training NCO.
Mm-hmm.
It was his job to make sure that all of the, you know, all of the guys got the proper training that they needed vis-a-vis schooling.
Right.
You know, like, this guy needs to go to this NCO course or this basic or whatever. I'm the training NCO, though. So it was kind of weird. Our positions almost flip-flopped on the military side. He was the first sergeant, so he's in charge of the training program. But I'm the training NCO, so I am actually responsible for it, but I report to him.
Right.
But on the civilian side, he reports to me.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's, you know, something that we worked out. But basically, he was like, I'm just going to make sure they go to school. And you're in charge of what they do when they're here for drill.
Sounds good to me.
When someone doesn't show up, call me.
Well, I don't even need to do that. We share an office. But but like I said, his job was to make sure that they got the proper Army training, and then I made sure that they got the drill training.
You know,
like that they had something to do when they came in for their 2 days a month.
Mm-hmm.
And I threw the cooks to the wolves my first weekend. And that was just...
I can just imagine what they're bitching about in the kitchen.
They weren't actually bitching that they were doing their job or that they had to do their job.
They were bitching at you. They were bitching about the sergeant, whether you wish to believe it or
the
not.
Sergeant, no, the sergeant first class actually appreciated it, and I heard him say it from across the wall a half a time. He goes, hey, at least it won't feel like we're here for 19 hours today. We got something to fucking do, guys. Shut up, quit bitching, and let's go.
I knew somebody was bitching in that tree.
I was totally going with the two guys below him were the ones that were bitching. He was like, no,
his job to keep them focused and working. Exactly. They got a job to do, but they're going to be bitching the whole time.
The way it works in the military, if you're not bitching, you're not doing it right.
Right. You know? No, that's I'm saying. Right. I'm sure half of the curses were directed at you, and half of the curses were directed at the equipment that hadn't been touched in 3 years.
But like I said, the guy that was actually in charge of the kitchen NCO, or the NCO, the cook, the sergeant first class that was in charge of the kitchen.
Yeah,
he loved it.
Yeah, because he was actually doing
his job.
As soon as you start getting your hands in that dirty fucking poultry, you're like, I like this again.
but the E3 or the E4 and E5.
Oh, they fucking couldn't. They hate it.
Goddamn, what the hell is he doing making us fucking do our job? But even they, by the end of the day.
Nice.
All right.
I've never done that before. Even them, by the end of the day, were actually appreciating the fact because...
No, it's its own reward. At the end.
Well, the main reason was is because they actually had something to do.
Yeah.
That the day went quicker.
Yeah.
You know, what do you mean it's time to go home?
Yeah.
I haven't... Of course, this isn't a day pre-cell phone days, too, so it's not like they were sitting in the corner playing video games, you know.
No, the best days of those kitchens were it was just overstudy. When some cooks like claim that they believe it when it's fast, and I'm like, I fucking hate it when it's unbelievably breakneck speed.
Right.
Well, the time goes by faster. I'm like, yeah, but you're also sweating your ass off. You're miserable. You're getting yelled at constantly. I'm like,
right.
Just oversteady is perfect.
Right. See, the difference was is that we had chicken for lunch the first day, and we had burgers for lunch the second day. Nice, simple, easy.
Yeah.
Well, any fucking time, sweetheart.
Right.
You know, nice, simple, easy. You know, we had a big ass fucking flat top. They can cook 144 burgers in half an hour. What? Go on. You know, they can cook 144 burgers in a half an hour, you know, on this damn thing. It's fucking huge. And, but no, the first weekend's of meals, just because they weren't prepared for it, they were edible. I'll give them that. They were edible. They weren't anything special.
I bet afterwards, but the next drill weekend.
Well, that's the thing. Is Sunday afternoon after they got the kitchen cleaned
They went
up,
home and cracked open a few manuals.
No.
Or they got the recipe cards or something.
No, the difference is... No, they had the recipe cards. The difference is... Sunday afternoon after they got the kitchen cleaned up from noon lunch, I called the three of them into my office, and I said, all right, guys, now that you know you're going to be cooking, They're like, fuck you. I said, all right, now that you know that you're going to be cooking, what do you want to cook?
Right.
You give me the meals you want to cook.
I'll order the food.
And I'll order the food. Because the system is nice and easy in the military.
Yeah.
It's what they got, like Pete said, recipe cards. They tell me the meal they
They're
want.
They're good, too.
Yeah.
I hate when people bitch about cooked military food. I get the MREs. I'm if you use those fucking recipe cards, the food you're making is really fucking good. The spaghetti. I told you about the spaghetti.
Yeah.
It tastes like mom's spaghetti when you eat it. That's the best part about it.
See, what happens is, you know, because the military bases them off of those recipe cards.
Yeah.
So if I go in and say, it's a computer program. I say, it says, how many people? 144. Meals. This and this.
And it pops you out the food.
It automatically orders. It says, okay, you need 12 cans of this, 8 cans of this, 4 cans of this. You're usually going to get a little extra because you'll usually get a half a can formula in there. So they'll send you the next one up. But, okay, you need this, 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 and this based off the recipe cards.
Yeah.
And then you can tweak if you want. If the cook wants to tweak, he can tweak.
Yeah.
But he has to let me know ahead of time, you know, because I got to order this shit.
Ahead of time.
Like 2 weeks out for it to get shipped in.
Yeah.
See, we had one experience with the Kansas City group, which the only reason I hated it was their I don't want to say their head NCO. I don't remember his exact rank. He was Air Force. So the bars aren't going to help you either. He was a higher up NCO.
Okay.
It was like Chief Tech Master Sergeant, some sort of
whatever. Yeah,
probably. He was high enough in the NCO command that he was somebody that we had to listen to when he came through. Had to listen to.
Right.
He was a dick. But then they had their safety officers, their food safety guys, and they were completely out of practice. There's two of them for a unit of like 600 people. Of course, their job is to go around to different kitchens while the food's being made by the soldiers and make sure it's all being done safely.
Yeah.
They're the inspectors of the kitchens in the unit. So we agreed, even though we're civilians, to let them get practice on us. And me and Dan stood there like, now you got to know, we're going to be safe as shit, but when it comes to the actual cooking of the food, it's going to be different. They're like, oh, yeah, we understand. As long as you're within the standards, like, we're going to be well within the state. We're going to be perfect on the safety standards. We always are. But you're going to see us doing things with the food that make you question how good it's going to taste. We don't want to hear any of that shit. We didn't use the word shit, but we don't want to hear that stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
So they're watching us cook and everything, and they're like, okay, so we have corn today. How many cans of corn? Because they have to record all that.
Yeah.
They also keep track of the money for the unit. We're like, these 5 cans of corn or whatever. Like, all right, and what are those wrappers? Butter. All right, was that pre-approved for the butter? I'm like, it was leftover butter from the previous unit. What was the date on it? The date's well within line. Here it is. All right, so are we being charged? You're not being charged for that. And why are you putting butter in the corn if the recipe and the sheet didn't call for it? Try a spoonful, asshole. Right. Here's it pre-butter. Here's it with butter.
As I say. Oh. I'm going to go off script a little bit here, and I'm going to improvise.
Dan's doing the same shit. Or that fucking bullshit piece of crap Kansas City NCO comes through, and he's like, oh, we're making green beans. And the inspector's sitting there watching us make the green beans, and I got the butter right there that he bitched about. He's like, you're going to put some onions and bacon in there, do it southern style? Like, that was the plan. And the other guy's like, huh? Like, yeah, we do things to make food taste good other than what is on your sheet.
Yeah, you see, and once I let them start doing the first weekend, it was literally just, here's the food.
Figure it out.
After that, it was, what do you guys want to cook?
Yeah.
And then, like I said, they could tweak it. If they wanted to make green beans, they could make green beans. But if they wanted to put onions and bacon in there with it, all right, just let me know so I can order the onions and the bacon. You know,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And then... Oh, was it about 3 months after that? Yeah. Then we went on a battalion exercise up to Fort McCoy,
mm-hmm.
up to those little shit-ass kitchens.
I still say they're not that shitty. I think they could be substantially worse.
The buildings are shit-ass.
The barracks are shitty, yeah.
Right.
Oh, the the buildings, the construction themselves. Yeah, they're shit. The
equipment is fully functional.
I call them tranny kitchens. They're completely passable.
Yeah. The equipment is perfectly functional, but the building itself sucks.
Garbage. The back half of the building, you're like, this is a professional kitchen. Then you go out to the serving area, and you're like, this place is a shithole.
The only thing it was missing
asshole
was
tits. Yeah. Asshole tits.
The only thing it was missing was Petroff's, pretty much.
Right next to the trash can, which is right next to the end of the serving line. That sort of shit.
And so I tell the cooks, I gave them a month's warning. I said, all right, guys, now we're going, instead of just us, this is the battalion. So now you're going to have to cook 800 meals 3 times a day, plus mid-rats, which is just sandwiches in a bag that you have for the, And they went, I hope there's more than the 3 of us.
Of course. Well, the other
company's cooks are going to come in with you. You know.
You'd probably need at least 6 guys for that.
They actually had 12.
Yeah. Anything less than 6 wouldn't even be functional.
Yeah, no, they had 12. And I said, but here's the thing. Breakfast is at 05.
Yeah.
Now, breakfast is, you can, I had to do, well, KP, you know, it's not what we called it in the Marines, but.
Yeah.
During 1 full week in boot camp.
Yeah.
Breakfast started at 05:30. I think we walked in there about 4 o'clock. You know, breakfast isn't hard.
No.
Was there one guy there first before 4?
Huh.
Oh. We ran the equipment check.
Well, there might have been
one. Not like with a notepad. We went in, turned on all the equipment, was functional and everything.
There might have been that
so the,
guy.
So the sheets, Tyson or somebody would schedule us in at 4. Me and Darren were there at 3:30 because we're flipping on the equipment. We're filling pots up, that sort of shit.
Yeah, there might have been that guy going on turning all the equipment. But you know, we all walked in at 4 and I said, all right, guys. Breakfast. Now, boot camp is a different animal than like out in the fleet or like that. Because literally, you get the same thing for breakfast. You get the same choices for lunch. You get the same choices for dinner. Carbs and protein.
Yeah.
Breakfast was going to be eggs, sausage, bacon, and toast.
Yeah.
And then they had little boxes of cereal if you wanted cereal instead of eggs. Couldn't have coffee.
That sucks.
Well, the drill instructors could have coffee, but the boots couldn't have coffee.
Oh, in boot camp?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I hated it.
That still does suck.
That sucks.
Literally.
It makes so much sense, unfortunately, but it sucks ass.
Literally, my first morning.
They don't want you dehydrated at all, do they?
No. Literally, my first morning of boot. They have coffee machines out there.
Yep.
For the drill instructors. They didn't tell us any of this stuff.
Walked up to get a cup?
Uh-huh. The first day.
Wolverton.
I've been up. Well, they didn't know. They didn't even know my name yet. You know, get out of that goddamn cup. Yeah. I grab a coffee cup and I go walking up. I get to about.
You know what their philosophy is? There's always one. There's one guy sitting there like, come on. Who's the first person to grab the coffee cup?
Well, oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Sergeant Hard as Nails is just sitting there waiting.
They threw a shit ton of information at us. All night, because this is, you know, the first night we're literally, we get there at 6 o'clock at night and we're awake all night, you know, and then we go in for breakfast. They threw all kinds of information at it. They couldn't have taken a half a second to say, you can't have coffee.
No, I know. There's one guy sitting there waiting for somebody to come. He needs something to yell about.
Yeah.
Just to make sure.
He's a drill instructor. He needs one thing to yell about in the morning.
So I get. One hand. I got the coffee cup in one hand and the handle in the other. What are you doing, boot?
What the fuck do you think you're doing? Getting coffee, sir?
This was my response. I'm getting coffee. You can't have coffee.
Put that fucking cup down.
Oh, right.
Okay.
Who told you you could could have coffee. I didn't say you could have coffee. You did not say I couldn't have coffee.
I didn't
wrong answer.
Yeah. Yep. The open-ended answer is not the right answer. You flip the cup upside down, you walk the fuck away.
You don't even put it back. You just flip it over, put it back, then leave it.
Unless it was dirty, then you immediately request permission to take it to the dish area.
Well, here's the funny thing.
Clean it yourself and bring it back.
When you would walk in and you would get your food, you would walk in, you would sign in.
Yeah.
And you would get your tray.
Yep.
And then you would walk down the line, and then the food, you'd split like this.
Yeah.
And they had the same thing on both sides, you know, like one company would come down this aisle, one company needed to split.
Yeah.
You'd walk down, and you would just take your tray, and they had the little sneeze guards up there.
Yep.
With the hole under the bottom, then they had servers on each thing.
Yep.
Which were recruits in their third month, and we'll get to that later.
Yeah.
And you would just take your tray and just jam it right in his face underneath the seize guard and go, eggs recruit, bacon recruit, and whatever you call out, they would put it on your plate. You know, that's
yeah.
And there was none of this made to order shit in boot camp either.
Oh, no, nope. You got what you fucking told to do.
Big ass steaming pile of reconstituted scrambled eggs.
You haven't earned the ability to think about what you fucking want yet.
No, you were allowed to choose what you wanted to eat. That was one of the very few personal liberties.
Yeah.
Were you allowed both meats if you wanted both meats?
Oh.
2 pieces of bacon, one sausage patty.
No, you could have as much food as you wanted in boot camp.
As long as you could eat it within 2 minutes.
But they actually gave us like 20 minutes. But it was 20 minutes from the first guy coming in to 20 minutes for the last guy to get out.
Through the line.
So if you were the last motherfucker in line,
had 2 minutes.
You had 2 fucking minutes, yeah.
So you wanted to be first.
Yeah.
You know. And
guarantees they get up in the morning.
Yep. Right.
But no, you can have as much as you want and whatever you wanted.
Because this is after PT, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we do PT.
Guarantees when they hustle, they're not tired after that PT line. They got to get to that chow line first.
Yeah, you do PT for about an hour, and then you'd run to the chow hall and eat.
Yeah.
You know, well, it depended on the schedule because, you know, you had 12 and 16 companies of recruits. So you're talking 300, anywhere between 3,000 people eating per meal. So it's a lot of people eating and, you know, trying to jam them in 2 hours. So it was...
There were schedules.
There were schedules to keep. Yeah. So sometimes
and a drill sergeant kept track of those fucking schedules, and you were on schedule.
So sometimes you ate at 5:45. Sometimes you ate at 7. It just depended on where you were.
On where you're at the fucking schedule. Right. Yeah.
And but we had 20 minutes, and like I said, it was 20 minutes from the first guy in to the last guy out, and you could have as much as you want, but you had to eat it.
Mm-hmm.
One of the drill instructors would literally be standing next to the trash cans, and if there was food.
You went back and fucking ate it.
You went back and finished that shit.
Yeah.
Or you went outside and you did push-ups and then you threw up and then...
You went back and ate it.
You went back. Right. So...
Let's clean your stomach out a little bit.
Make room for that food you didn't eat.
Yeah. You got half an egg. That's 30 push-ups.
Right.
Feeling nauseous yet? Are wasting you going to puke on my grass?
Wasting my goddamn Marine Corps food. Fucking Marine died to serve you that food. You think
three
I'm
Marines took a bullet to give you them eggs.
No, I understand. Like, I'm not laughing at this. I'm laughing at it because...
Complete psychological breakdown.
Yeah.
Right.
Of the amount of thought.
By not eating an egg, I killed three Marines.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Right. I'm laughing at the thought process and the methodical thinking that goes into making those statements to break someone's brain apart.
Mm-hmm. And that's really the whole point.
Yeah.
I mean, in boot camp...
I'm glad Rhonda accepted that answer when I gave it to her.
Right. See, at least in the Marines...
They are brainwashing you.
Yeah. At least in the Marines, I'm not allowed to, I can't speak for the Army or the Air Force, but I know I've witnessed it from the outside, but I didn't actually experience it, you know? You're not allowed to use the word I or me.
At all.
At all in boot camp.
Yeah.
It's this recruit. You're not allowed to use the word you.
Yep.
You refer to them by their rank.
It's rank and name. They're trying to teach you to stop thinking of the individual and, yeah. and think of the team.
Oh, yeah. No. I totally get it.
That's why I loved working with Dan.
Go ahead.
Just in general, that Dan taught me the most important part of leadership that he learned in the Army. If you are in any position of leadership, no one gets to chew out your guys.
Except you.
You get chewed out on behalf of them, then exactly. you go and chew them out.
Shit rolls downhill. Yep.
Yep.
But if they're going to get yelled at by anything from a lieutenant to a senior NCO or anything like that, you take the lashings, yep. then you go and back, and you're like, you're a fucking idiot.
Yeah, because
I just got yelled at for you.
Because that guy screwing up is a reflection on me as his leader, not on him.
Right.
You know, I didn't train him properly, obviously.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love that aspect of the military.
Mm-hmm.
There's those other stupid leadership memes and stuff that's like, never ask him to do something you wouldn't be willing to able to do and something you haven't done and all the other.
It's why a captain.
The other shit rolls downhill thing that everybody bitches about. I'm like, sometimes it's a better thing than not because you could be getting yelled at by
seven people versus one person you trust.
It's the same reason why a captain is ultimately responsible for everything that happens on his ship.
Yep.
Because if something happens that's screwed up, doesn't matter if he's asleep in the bunk when it happens.
He didn't properly...
Training broke down at some point because he's supposed to train the executive officer, who's supposed to train the line officers, who's supposed to train the NCOs, who's supposed to train the line leaders, who's supposed to train the boots.
Yep.
Somewhere along that line, something malfunctioned. It's the captain's fault.
Yep.
Eventually.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
No, it's...
But no, like I said, that first day going to get coffee. You didn't say I couldn't have coffee.
You actually said that?
I did say that.
Oh, you're an idiot.
It was first day.
First day, literally. We didn't know the rules yet.
Well, of course. He goes,
what are you doing? Getting coffee. Did I say you could have coffee? You didn't say I couldn't have coffee.
I would have made the same mistake.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have said that back to him, though.
No, I did. I said it out loud.
I know.
But I said it in that voice, too. And he goes, what? Oh, my God. What the fuck?
And he saw that. He saw the vein.
No, actually, it wasn't even in the forehead. It was in the neck. It came out and it started yelling at me too. You know,
yeah.
What are you talking about?
What the fuck did you just say?
I heard it too, baby. Right,
but the shit they're sending me this day. You put that cup down.
Right. And
back of the line.
So that's boot camp.
Yeah.
Did they have orange juice or orange drink?
Right, both.
Oh, that's nice. If you didn't want to drink just water.
But we drank them from grenades.
How many people actually drank milk? That was a big question in the morning.
I did for breakfast.
With water or something else?
No.
Didn't dilute it at all?
No.
Then you went and did other shit?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But
how many other people drank milk and something else?
Most everybody.
You got to dilute that shit otherwise. Right. Next time you're doing push-ups, you're about to puke milk.
No, that's one of those things that I grew up on milk, so that's
Even if he had puked milk, it would have been okay. Right. He'd done it before.
It's only bad because when you puke up milk with breakfast shit, all the fat in the milk sticks, so that, you know, that aftertaste you get from puke, can't quite get rid of it.
Yeah.
If it goes in your nose at all or anything like that, it's going to stay there.
Mm-hmm. No, see, because the difference is usually I hydrated the night before. So when I got up in the morning, usually the only thing I had to drink was one little glass of milk for breakfast. And that was basically enough liquid to, like, wash down those nasty eggs.
Yeah.
The bagged eggs.
Right. But
were they prison eggs or powdered eggs?
Powdered eggs.
Yummy. Good
shit. Except Sundays. Sundays we got real eggs.
They gave us bags of those. We used them to cook.
No, Sundays we got real eggs, and I know this because I had to do cook duty for a week in boot camp.
You put water in them, and they turn into Sunday, egg beaters. Sunday, you cook them, and they turn into the nastiest shit on the planet that you never want to see ever again.
And Sunday sucked. if you were working in the chow hall, at least in boot camp, because everybody got to sleep in an extra half hour. First of all, because it was Sunday. That's how we knew it was Sunday, because we got to sleep in until 6 instead of 5:30.
It almost would have been better if you'd have gotten my ass up at 5:30.
Right. No, by the end of the week, that extra half hour was the greatest thing. The
fucking gift in the world.
It was better than a blowjob, you know?
Yeah.
You'd be surprised how easy it is to go to sleep in boot camp.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
But the thing is that the cook's still going at the regular time. Why? Because Sunday you get real eggs.
They got to crack all
them. They got to crack all them eggs. And you figure, again, you're serving 3,000 people.
Yep.
That's a lot of fucking eggs.
Yeah.
They had machines for it, actually. They had some kind of weird deal.
Oh, must be nice. Must be nice. Have a machine do the cracking.
But they were real eggs, but they were still scrambled. So they would just crack the egg into this big fuck off.
Probably like a big pot. Mixing bowl. Yeah. And just turn the mixer on.
You know how
on?
You make scrambled eggs in a pan like that with like 4 eggs? Yep. Now imagine that with like 30 gallons of egg substance.
Oh, I know. I'm imagining what this is. It's like a big fuck
boat oar that you're
I was imagining that you'd actually make it in like the same thing you make pizza dough in. Like the big fucking hook.
No, the Burkel? No, they didn't know. No, this was just a big pot. They would cook, and you would sit there with literally a boat.
I ain't gonna fluff these eggs, Matt.
Right. You would sit there with literally a boat oar and just and just keep scraping the sides, and that's
yeah. Ours was the steamer.
Oh, really?
No. We put a pan liner in the 16-inch pans, or the 8-inch hotel pans. Poured the egg in, sealed it tight, put it in the steamer. You get the fluffiest. You didn't have to fluff shit.
Yeah, no, we had the big 25-30 gallon
boilers.
Pots.
Yeah, the boilers.
Like this. And then you would literally, like I said,
the floor boilers?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And sit there with a boat oar and just...
It is a boat oar.
That's probably...
I've had to use one. It is a fucking boat oar that's made out of metal.
Yeah.
You could get in a canoe and use that fucker to go a decent pace.
Now...
Like, he says boat oar, you're like, yeah, it's a giant stick, isn't it? No, it's...
Probably about this big.
There's some kayaker in Utah that's considering it.
It's about this big.
Yeah.
You got to remember, you're swinging, 40 gallons of 30, 40 gallons?
You need the leverage.
Yeah.
You need the leverage.
Like, even on the end of the paddle, it even had the rounded edges like a fucking kayak oar and shit, because you had to get into the bottom of the pot. If you stop stirring it for 15 seconds, you'd get burnt shit on the bottom, and then you'd scrape that in and all that other shit. It's... Yeah. You can only do it for about 15, 20 minutes at the most, and then I'd say it's equivalent to doing push-ups.
Yeah.
Those industrial cooks, you don't see them small, skinny assholes. That's why when Maddie, our banquet chef, remained at like 80 pounds skin and bones, I'm like, something's not right here. He's either not doing the work...
Or he's doing something.
Or he's an alcoholic. Oh, it turns out he's an alcoholic. Okay, there we go.
Yeah.
He goes home and drinks a six-pack instead of having a meal. That explains everything.
Yeah.
If he had a fucking cheeseburger from McDonald's, he probably would have put on 15 pounds of muscle just from doing half the job.
Mm-hmm.
No, we didn't ever have to do that until it was spaghetti. Which I probably would have done the eggs first.
Spaghetti stirs was a little bit easier.
It stirs easier, but you got to stir it for a longer.
Right.
And then you got to get it out of there. And there's this weird thing about eggs. Eggs cool because they're pure protein. They give off heat faster than any other type of protein. I'd give it 15 minutes. You could probably put your hand down the middle of that pot, pull eggs from the bottom, and pull it up, and you wouldn't be burned. It'd be hot, but it wouldn't be burned.
Yeah,
noodles, on the other hand, love to retain heat for eons and eons and eons.
But the difference was is that we would take that 30-gallon pot of eggs, and then we would put it in the 8-inch
hotels
trays and, you know, put them out on the line. And we would go through that pot of eggs in about 5 minutes.
Scoop eggs.
Yep.
Sometimes two. Usually one scoop eggs. Get your 4 ounces eggs.
Yep. again, times 3,000 people, so you're making a lot of eggs.
You got to do the math. I was surprised they were allowed extra, because you figure 2 eggs per head. So you're talking 6,000 eggs, but then they're allowed extra.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to factor in that half of them, so it's got to be 2.5 eggs per head.
Yeah.
Just to account for the extra. And there's going to be waste, but you have to account for the extra.
There was usually a lot left over, but not as much as you would think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those cooks had it down to a science, you know, especially...
Once you get the feel of a fucking group, no, you know.
Right.
The first, like, 4 or 5 meals, you don't know jack shit. And then,
exactly. But, I mean, you were graduating a company and bringing in a new company every week. But other than that, like, the middle 10 were there.
No, our... If it was a week-long group, we needed 2 meals, and we got a fucking finger on them right away. We knew exactly what they were going to do in the morning.
Right. Yeah, and like I said, those guys had it down to a science. You know, the guys that ran these kitchens, I mean, you know, there were... It wasn't like they just set a platoon of boots onto a kitchen and said...
Learn how to make eggs.
Right.
No. Yeah, I got you.
There was a core group of cooks in charge of the kitchen, and then they would send a platoon of... bitches, basically.
Yeah.
We did the menial shit, you know, the boat or any eggs, the carrying shit around, the
pull this out of the fucking oven. Uh-huh. Shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
They have enough sass. You're going to dish pit, asshole.
Exactly. Well, the cleaning the dishes, you know, the picking up the dishes out of the
picking up on the fucking trays.
You know, the worst job. Did they have one of those conveyor belt deals?
Yeah.
Is being on the receiving end of that conveyor belt.
Oh, trust me. Could have been much worse.
Well, it wasn't so bad in boot camp because you had to eat all the food.
Right.
But they'd have about a half a dozen of us right inside the hole where it comes in the wall. And it would be one guy's job to pull the silverware off.
Oh, wow. Okay. They actually had to bust the trays for you guys?
Huh?
They had to bust the trays for you guys?
Right.
Oh, I thought you would be expected to split the silver and everything yourselves.
No. No, well, no. Oh, wow. No. I mean, inside, after they've come through the conveyor, in through the wall, they would have a half a dozen guys right inside the hole. So the first guy, it would be his job to pull off, like, the fork.
Yeah.
Or he'd pull off the silverware, and then he'd have, like, three of those little dish rack.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
With the holes in it and all that. Mm-hmm. And he would just go, okay, fork, spoon, knife.
Yep.
Next tray, fork, spoon, knife. And that's all he did was just
pull
the next guy would pull the glasses off.
Yep.
The next guy would pull all of the non-edible.
Like the chicken bones and shit like that.
No, like the napkins.
Oh, the napkins and shit. Okay.
The used packets of whatever, this, that, or the other. The fourth guy would pull off the biodegradable versus the non-biodegradable. That's where
peels, the orange peels, the apple cores. Right.
That's where you would separate stuff like the chicken bones from the mashed potatoes, the peels,
You know,
the stuff that you could compost versus the stuff that you really can't, you know.
Yeah.
And then it would get to us or whoever. You know, you rotated jobs every day, so you ended up doing everything in the kitchen once.
Yeah.
During
the
thing.
And then the final guy takes the actual tray, sprays it down, sticks it on the rack, throws it into the actual sanitizer. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And we had one of those big ass industrial ones where, you would take the trays and you would put them on this bigger tray.
Yep.
Like this.
Yep.
And then you could take like 6 of those and jam them into this thing.
Yep.
Lower the,
mm-hmm.
It was like a stamping plant.
Oh yeah,
pull down the thing.
You're dealing with two people that work. I had to do dishes at the fucking pizza joint.
And you push a button on the side of it, and like lights and buzzers and sirens would go off for about a minute and a half, and then it would go right, and then it would go.
Grab it.
Then
open it up,
guy
pull
the other.
It out, let that one dry. You've got the neck. Dude, I had this down to a fucking science. I could run 3 racks through that thing. Like, I had one rack that I was pulling out and I would dry, one that was in the machine that was actually doing
it. No, we could put 6 at a time in there. Right.
The ones they converted to now are the automatic feeders. You don't actually have to pull a handle, shut it down, and time it all out. The trays feed through completely automatically.
Oh, okay. Shit.
No, you see, like I said, the difference was Is, you know, you're talking about putting one tray at a time in there and shutting it down.
Oh, it was six stacks of those racks?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Like you could put three racks of trays in like this, and then a rack of silverware and a rack of glasses.
Oh,
and a
rack of, fuck.
You know, oh, you had a tall rack.
Yeah,
oh,
okay. Yeah, you had a tall. Okay. I gotcha. So you.
Geez. That would have been a nightmare.
That would have been a fucking nightmare.
Well, that's why that took like four more guys to do it, two on the incoming side and two on the outgoing yep. side.
And then one guy to run the.
And then one guy, that was his job. It was just to hold the handle. Yep. All right, clear.
Yep. Yeah, the one at the pizza.
Right, up.
The one at the pizza. The one at the pizza joint. You could run it all. One person could run the
whole
thing.
Stick a tray in, rinse. Yeah.
Yep. You set the rack up, rinse it, shove it in, slam it. When that one's done, roll it out. Pick up the ones off the other side. Put those on the pile. Take the rack. Put it on the front. Fill it up.
Right. No. This thing was industrial. Like I said, literally, they were jamming 3,000.
But we did have the giant pot and pan sink, though.
Oh, we had those too. Yeah, those sucked. The three bay sinks.
Oh, dude. We had the three bay sink, but at Volk Field they had the jacuzzi, which was the soak cycle, which was just amazing.
No, we didn't have that
micro bubbles.
We didn't. Nice. We didn't have that luxury.
It was like the only bathtub I could probably fit in, like laying down in. Like you wanted to get in and have a rinse.
these were about that size. I mean, these were actually probably about 6 foot by 6 foot. Or 6 foot by 4 foot sinks. Then the first one was just, what was it? Soap and hot water.
Yeah.
Then the rinsing stage.
Soak, rinse, and sanitize.
Then the sanitizer stage. And then, right? Mm-hmm. And then the drying rack, which was a misnomer because nothing was ever dry when it got put back out on the line to be used again.
Nope. Not unless it sat fucking overnight.
Yeah. More of a drainage rack than a dryer rack.
Make sure it's nice and not water pools of water.
No, when the Brooklyn guys saw us cleaning the kitchen.
I mean, no, it was still hot when it went back out to be used for the next.
Yep.
So it was basically, fuck it, it's hot, it's clean, right? Yeah, okay.
Yep. When the Brooklyn guys saw us cleaning the kitchen, they thought I'm pretty sure they thought me and Dan were psychotic. Because we figured out a long time ago that all the appliances at Volk Field were completely driven off of electric. And we're sealed, watertight, and everything else around the electrical circuits and everything.
Right.
And we're plugged directly, routed into the AC underground, sealed, everything else, waterproofed, really up to code.
Must have been nice.
This was their deluxe kitchen at Volk Field. This is the one that if you took some of the equipment out, you could play a good game of touch football in and still have 30 yards to run in the end zone. And when we figured out that everything was sealed and waterproofed, we just boiled one of those big 50-gallon pots of water.
Just threw it across the floor, and that's how you clean everything?
Close. Then we put two things of Dial soap in it, the gallon handles, and then we put 5 gallons of vinegar in it.
Right.
And then we pulled out buckets.
That sounds like...
Scooped it up and threw it up like on the vents and all over the equipment and shit.
That actually...
Pulled out the hose, covered all the shit that had to be covered that was even the posters on the wall and shit with tarps. Threw all that shit around, pulled out two hoses and hosed the motherfucker down.
That's pretty close to how I used to clean... The Little Caesars floor before health inspection day.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that cleaned the floor too. And then we had the Zamboni too. Mm-hmm. It was a power washing machine on the floor. Once we get done throwing the buckets of water and spraying it down, we send one of the grunts through with the Zamboni. He just cleans out all the water.
We would pull everything out from the walls. You know, all of the prep. Because that's you know the part that you don't necessarily get every single time you clean. But for inspection, when you knew the health inspectors were coming,
you pulled all that. You pulled the make table out. You pulled the fucking cut table out.
We would do the same thing. We would take like 50 gallons of hot water with soap and vinegar in it, and probably have about a half inch of this shit just all over the floor. And then I would just say, "All right, guys, start mopping." And
one guy's got the squeegee.
No. You're not at the squeegee yet.
Deck brushes.
Okay.
You're literally just pushing this water around to lift all of the crap off.
Yep.
And flood it in the water. And then you would start squeegeeing.
Yeah.
But you have to mop for about 20 minutes
to get all the crap off the floor, lift it up
out of the tile before.
Yep. Then you get the squeegee and it goes down the drain.
So then there was a big debate between me and Dan on good and good enough. He was good enough, or he was good. I was not good enough, which was he'd take that Zamboni out because Volk Field had the tables and chairs.
Right.
And he'd run it down the aisles, then go out and spot mop. When I was in charge of the dinners and everything, I was mopping all the way. And then some of the people were complaining that I never used the Zamboni to get half the job done. And Dan's like, you should just use that. And I'm like, that's not good enough. And he's like, what? I'm like, well, one, at the end of the day, we still have to get the mops and buckets out and go underneath, pull all the chairs out, get underneath the tables and everything, or sweep out into the main aisle, mop underneath, then run the Zamboni through.
Right.
Or we could just mop the whole thing top to bottom, skip a step, and use the exact same amount of time and labor to get it done. not the exact same amount of time. The exact same amount of labor to get it done, but save 30 minutes of fucking time pulling out those goddamn chairs.
Right.
We don't need that Zamboni out
now,
there.
Now, after boot camp, once I actually got out to Fleet, the first duty station I went to, we didn't have hallways in the barracks. So we didn't have to deal with like common area type stuff other than sweeping it with a broom to clean all the dead leaves and grass and all that stuff.
Yeah.
They opened, the rooms open up outside instead of inside. Now when I got to Okinawa though, they opened up inside. And I was in the band. Now here's the funny thing. We had our own like floor and wing of the building. So like, all right, if you go down that hall, that's the band. Leave them alone. They party. Those guys party. Leave them the fuck alone.
Those are a bunch of crazy motherfuckers. You're like the special forces type of guy.
And considering that the rest of the building was an artillery battery, and they left us the fuck alone, that's how hard we partied.
Yeah.
But one thing I did learn from them, because we had to do field days every Thursday for Friday inspection, and you have these common areas, which are these hallways with the tile floors.
Right.
And every week, like, four guys from each wing would be responsible for buffing and polishing the thing. Now, you had these floor buffer dealies. You've seen them before. Mm-hmm. They look like a vacuum cleaner with a spinner head on the bottom of it that are about, you know, 2 feet wide. Now, you'd have to strip and then wax. So you had the stripper you would take and you would just fling it down the floor. And you would strip up all the old wax. Now, most guys didn't do that until the wax got, like, really bad. You just put another coat of wax down.
Right.
What we learned is we'd strip the floor down, and then we'd just put a shit ton of wax down. And before we even ran the buffer over it, somebody came up with the bright idea of lighter fluid and a match.
Okay.
And you're only supposed to use a little bit of lighter fluid. You know, just enough to, like, warm up the wax to get it to soak into the cracks, you know?
Yeah.
One of the cannon cockers one day made the mental leap that, well, if a little bit of... if a little bit of lighter fluid is good, you know,
the same mental leap that says, hey,
right. If a 5.56 is good, a 50 cal is better.
Right. You know? Yeah.
Right. And these guys are shooting 1.55s.
Yeah. You know, and these are the people that we are trusting with the artillery to run this shit.
Yeah, if an 88 is good, a 155 is better, you know,
right,
that kind of thing. So somebody said, hey, you know, if a little bit of lighter fluid is good, I should be better. So this dumbass puts an entire can of lighter fluid, not the little Raysol cans, but like the, remember when you used to get the old half gallon?
Yep. Can of fucking Zippo fluid? Right. Yeah, fuck yeah.
He took the whole damn thing down the floor.
Moron.
Lit it on fire. And all of a sudden, we're down on the other side of the wing, you know, because we got our half and they got their half down there. All was, you know, and I was doing floor duty, yeah. And we're still stripping the floor, but we're down by the other end.
You hear that combustion pressure change in the hallway.
No, even before that, we heard, fire in the hole! Which is normal. You normally say that before you throw the match. Just in case, you know, so nobody comes walking out of the room when the fire is going.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So we hear, fire in the hole! Fire in the hole!
Boom!
Whoosh! Well, yeah, it was more of a
It shouldn't have went boom. There was no compression.
More of a midway between a boom and a whoosh. It was a whoosh that was so fast it might as well have been a boom.
Yeah.
You know, but it sucked all of the air out of it.
Yep.
That's the pressure differential. You hear the...
And all of a sudden you see these guys just diving for open doors. Because lighter fluid, when it's first lit, doesn't really have a color to it.
Nope.
It takes a second for the color to show up. But you can tell.
Yeah.
You know, because it's supposed to make one sound, and this made a completely different sound. So,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They went diving for the doors, and we're like, what the hell? And then all of a sudden we just saw the no flame just go to
all fucking orange.
It looked like backdraft, you know?
Yep.
They come about halfway down the hall at us, and we're just standing there going, fuck!
Hit the deck!
No. We went tear ass into the emergency exit.
Yeah.
Wrong move. Because what did we do?
Remember set the I said fucking it, fire alarm on.
No. Remember I said, no, these they don't have fire
alarms. They opened the door.
What's the first thing that I said that them lighting the fire did? It sucked all the air out of the thing,
yeah.
Right? We just opened that door and reintroduced
fresh oxygen,
all kinds of oxygen into this fire. And we go diving out the door, and about a second after we dive out the door, the fireball just comes.
Wow.
Right out at us. Now, luckily, it snuffed itself out pretty quick because... The
fuel would have ran out right, real fast. The fuel ran out real quick.
Well, I mean, it could burn there just wasn't a whole lot of shit to burn. It was a cinder block building.
It's specifically designed to be fire retardant, which would mean the fuel is only the lighter fluid, which would mean the minute the lighter fluid burned off,
I mean,
if nothing else, it could bust, and that was the end of it.
It melted the shit out of the tile in the hallway.
Yeah.
It disintegrated the, I'm going to call them asbestos ceiling tiles or whatever the hell they are. You know that the drop ceiling type tiles?
Yeah. Acoustic.
Huh? Acoustic. Yeah, the acoustic tiles. And I'm calling them asbestos because this was the early 90s.
And they probably were.
And they probably were.
Well, why not? The siding on those fuckers was.
Right. It disintegrated those, and it's just burned the shit out of the tiles. More of a scorch than a burn, you know? Mm-hmm. And those guys got in a little bit of trouble.
I would bet.
They had a buff out.
That's actually, they tried. They were up half the night trying to see if they could buff the scorch out of the tiles. And they didn't manage to do it. They managed to make it look like it had been there for a while.
It was like that when we found it, sir. And last guy was crazy, I bet.
So the next day, we go to work, and about an hour in, I get called into the platoon sergeant's office. All right, Corporal Warden, what the hell is going on? Did you light the hallway on fire? No, sir. The cannon cockers did across the hall.
The goddamn artillery.
Yeah. He goes, what? No, I said, no, I watched him do it. They put a half gallon of fucking lighter fluid on. Like that.
Sir, I'll shoot fireballs out of my tuba. I'm not going to do it in the hallway, though. Right. You're coming to the band asking if we lit the building on fire.
And my response.
Did you talk to the artillery yet?
That you have us next
to?
Well,
no. No, I just thought it was funny because of my reputation that I got called into the platoon sergeant's office asking if I set the building on fire. I'm like, what are you asking me for? Just because I like to blow shit up and shoot stuff? And okay, I get it. No.
It seems like a logic. If it wasn't... If I
had a reputation.
Yeah. If it's one of those ones that... If it was an inkling that it was somebody in the band, they were going to come and ask you.
Right. Yes.
And if it wasn't you, then it definitely was the fucking artillery guys next door.
And that's what he said. He goes, did you try to burn down the hallway? I said,
nope.
No, it was a can of cockers. He said, all right.
Yeah. It was like, yeah. No,
because I also had the reputation of if I screwed up, I was perfectly willing to admit it.
Yeah.
You know. And then that happened, you know, a couple of times when I was learning how to blow shit up and shoot stuff. You know, it happens to everybody. You know, there were not... dangerous incidents, but there were incidents.
Yeah.
You know, in the learning phase of learning how to blow stuff up. Hey, how come you used 10 blocks of C4 instead of the 2 that were required? Bigger boom. Okay, well, at least you're honest about it.
I had the logic that if 2 were going to do the job and we needed to make a bigger fucking hole, 10 seemed the appropriate amount.
Right.
Well, I guess you're not wrong there, but like...
Right. That is kind of a waste of C4. No, yeah. One.
It was fucking cool. When
there's,
it went
no, there's no such thing as too much explosive, sir.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. It's like... They're like... We need to, you need to exercise some restraint.
No,
we,
I don't.
We get the logic. We understand your logic on why you did that. But just a little bit.
No. Usually my answer to how come you used more explosives than you needed to, but it was pretty, wasn't it?
It went boom.
You
and
saw
it was a cool looking boom.
You saw it go boom, right? Yeah, that was pretty, wasn't it? Yeah, it was. You know?
Harry. I took care of it.
The bridge isn't there anymore, is it?
Fucking bridge is gone, isn't it?
Hey, there's the river.
I don't care about the river. You said
blow the fucking bridge.
You said blow
up.
The bridge. You didn't say anything you about not blowing a river.
You could have just used the explosives to clear a hole to drain the river.
Right. It's completely inefficient.
But now the enemy can't depend on the river for sustenance.
See, now
that... See? Now you're not thinking, sir.
Yeah. Oh, man.
And all them fish that blew up with it, they can't eat those either, can they? No,
nope,
no,
no. Nope.
See, you didn't think this all the way through, sir.
I was
more
just
explosives is better.
Hearts and minds, sir. Hearts and minds.
I was just following Sherman's response with scorched earth.
That's
Paul.
Mines with an E. Yeah.
There's no D there, just an ES.
Yeah.
But no, actually one of the funniest things, right after I transferred into the reserves from active duty, literally check into the unit. I got off active duty with no intention whatsoever into going in the reserves, you know, cause when you get off active duty, they said, all right, you did 4 years active duty. You do 4 years in the IRR, which is kind of like
if some shit goes off, we can call you back up. You got an MOS and you're good to go.
Right. They call it the IRR. Individual Ready Reserves.
Yeah.
You're in the reserves, but you don't go to drill every month.
Yeah.
You know, all it is, it's just a status. In the next 4 years, like you said, we can call you up and you can go. Well, I got home and about 3 days later, I kind of missed it.
Yeah.
So I said, fuck it. You know, there's a Marine Reserve unit in Rock Island.
Yeah.
I'll join. Well, it was a general support maintenance company, which is completely different from what I did. They're mechanics is what they are. They fix shit. Okay. So then they said, okay, you can be a maintenance management specialist. I said, okay, what's that? They said, you order parts.
Fuck that. Oh, so that's when you transitioned to the Army?
No, it was actually 2 years after that.
Okay.
But I said, really? You're going to make me a pencil pusher? I thought being in the band was bad. Then the first sergeant heard me complaining about being a maintenance management specialist.
Oh, here we go. That was your first? You fucked up,
no,
Frank?
No, I didn't, actually. He goes, you're the first person I've had come into this unit not wanting to push paper. What the hell? Then he pulls out my said, oh, you're active duty. You just came off active duty. Oh. Ooh.
Ooh.
Right. Ah. He started going through the shit that you've done and the shit that you were in.
Hey, Corporal Warburton, guess what? You're my new training NCO. All right, First Sergeant. What are my limitations? Don't kill anybody. Okay. Because the Marines, unlike the Army, actually do train to that. You know, hey, at least once a year, you're going to go out in the field and you're going to blow shit up and you're going to go like that. Let's see, about 2 months later, we went up to Fort McCoy for some demo training. Just simple stuff. Grenade tosses, C4, did a couple of ring mains with little quarter sticks of TNT.
Yeah.
And Bangalore torpedoes, which are my personal favorite. They call them torpedoes, but they're not. They're basically 5 foot long pipe bombs. Yeah. Is what they are.
Yeah.
You see them in World War II movies.
Yep.
You know, yep. They use them for breaching fences and stuff like that.
Yep.
And the thing is that they actually have a little adapters that you can link these things.
Yep.
So you can have like a 50 foot long, 2 inch in diameter pipe bomb, and you stick a fuse in the end of it, and boom, it makes a nice little 5 foot path for you to go through. Works really good for clearing minefields too, you know, that kind of thing.
And just feed that motherfucker out there, hit it, boom.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and they even have a little adapter cone on the front of it so you don't set off mines as you're going through.
Yeah.
Somebody didn't think that all the way out, but anyway.
It's the military. Some things don't get thought all the way through.
Right. And but we're not doing all that kind of weird shit. We're just setting them up and blowing them up. You know, this is how you set it up, and this is how you set the fuse. This is, you know, how you run your wire. And then we even had a couple of shape charges.
Yeah.
That you would use for, like, blowing a hole in a...
Indoors and shit.
No. No, the big pluck-off, 100-pound, blow a 5-foot hole in the road to capture a vehicle.
Oh, gotcha. Shape charge. Okay.
Shape charge.
I gotcha.
And we go out for the first Bangalore torpedo. Now, normally we double prime these things, which is at the end of a Bangalore torpedo or pretty much any type of munition that uses a fuse or a hard munition, you know, like a Bangalore torpedo or a Claymore mine or, you know, something like that where there's an actual built-in hole.
Yeah.
There's two of them. Now, a Bangalore torpedo, there's not. Well, there is, but there's not. But the first 6 inches on each side are your primer charge. So what you would do is you'd stick a fuse in the hole, and then you would put a fuse on the outside and then wrap it in deck cord.
Yeah.
And that's called double priming. So that way, if the first one doesn't go off, you've got a second way to blow this thing up from a distance.
Yeah.
The very first one we set up, neither worked.
Oh, shit.
Which is not a good thing.
No. How the fuck do you blow that thing up then?
Usually you call EOD and you sit on the range for 2 hours with it closed because nobody can leave the bunker. And then they got to go out in their fucking suits.
Yeah.
And they don't want to go out in their fucking suits, you know? So I call EOD on the landline because you can't use a radio because this is back in the days of electric blasting caps, and you can't get on the radio too close to the thing because you
might
blow it up.
Set it off. Yeah,
and I'm like, well, I want to set it off. Maybe no, okay.
You're like, maybe this will work. Fuck, it didn't work this time. God damn it!
So I call EOD, and they're like, well, fuck, we don't want to come out there. I'm like, well, I have my rifle in my truck or in my Humvee. Like, what kind of rifle? So, well, you know. Oh, you have an M40 up there? Yeah. Try shooting the end of it and see if that works. But I got to go up on top of it. Yeah, you do. Fuck you, sir. All right. Here I am from about 100 yards away. Trying to hit a fuse that's about that big that's wrapped in deck cord.
So I'm assuming that it would, when you shoot this thing, it actually would set it off. Is it like impact detonation?
The fuse is.
Okay.
The torpedo itself isn't. But if you hit the fuse, then the fuse can go, which can set off the torpedo. Which
I got you. I was just making sure that there was some portion of this was impact detonation.
Right.
Okay. Because it doesn't work. This isn't the fucking movies where you get to fire around.
No, it's just not. You don't just shoot the torpedo and it goes off. No, you have to hit
the fucking impact, the deck cord, which is impact ignition. Right. Yeah.
And it did work, but only because I hit the fuse. You know, I mean, if you would have hit the end of the torpedo where the primer charge was, it would have went through, but it would have just made a mess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we managed to go 3 hours again.
Nice.
We have a minute and a half to end this show. What did we spend the last hour and a half talking about?
You and your military stories and food.
Military cooking.
It's fun.
To which in my entire time in the military, I have exactly 1 week of experience. And I don't even remember it. I remember Boat Acre and the eggs and carrying shit out, but I didn't do a whole lot of cooking. But we'll be back next week. I think the girls are done.
They're not coming back?
I don't think so.
That's fine.
They got other stuff going on. They got their life and shit. You know,
they got the
schedules never work out. I told them, I'm like, look, just if you can't do it, just shit happens. We tried. We had fun for 6 months. We're out. Yeah. But we'll see. Until then, let's get out of here. See everybody next week. Bye.